All right. Good evening. Welcome to the Nyack School District Board of Education meeting, Tuesday, March 15th. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
The amended agenda.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. President's report. I've just got two short things tonight. I want to extend a congratulations to Nicole Saver, who had an award this weekend from the Nyack Center for Women of Leadership. Every year they honor female leaders in the, I believe it's in the county, or it might only be Nyack. But she was awarded, and so we want to extend our congrats to Nicole. It's always wonderful when we can be recognized, any one of our staff. And she deserves our congrats. The other thing I want to say is that I attended the high school play on Friday evening, opening night, and it was phenomenal. My daughter's in crew and told me afterwards it was a disaster, and I'm like, so I guess there are some things that, you know, and I was aghast, but then afterwards I'm like, wow, you know, there are intricacies that we just don't see. And apparently she told me, had you been awake, you would have seen it, which was not the issue. but clearly she wanted to get back at me. But clearly my point here is that the play was absolutely spectacular. Yeah. And if you have a chance to do it, I think they have three more showings. There'll be Friday and I believe two on Saturday. So if you have the chance, please go support our kids. This one was really, really phenomenal. Congrats to everybody involved and in pulling that off. Dr. Montesano.
Yes, I'm going to try to keep my report brief. I know we have a very busy agenda tonight. I too attended the play with my wife on Friday night, and I just really want to give my congratulations to Joe Egan and staff and the students and the cast. You know, it is such a privilege to be part of this school district. I don't know what you folks do in this community in terms of how you raise your children, but no matter where you look, there's talent everywhere you go. And the play the other night was, if you haven't had a chance to see it, it's extraordinarily, from the moment it begins to the very end, in terms of the kind of surprise ending, it's just a beautiful, beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. I also attended the Nyack Center Women of Leadership and Vision, and all three award winners or recognizer, people being recognized, Vivian England, Joe Lohr, who's a member of Nyack Rotary with me, and certainly very proud to be to see Nicole. She gave a beautiful acceptance speech. You should know, as a board, I met two of her sisters, and Nicole is unique. There's only one Nicole. A bit more reserved, I would say. And finally, just a reminder that you know, the weather seems to still be cooperative. I would like the parents and students and staff to kind of circle Friday, May 27th on your calendars. If we stay weather free up until that point, that will be a closing date for the district with regard to the extra snow day that we currently see in our bank. And that's it.
Okay, thank you very much, Hunter. Student reps report, Hunter Andreska.
Thank you, President Hughes. Just a couple things. First of all, our voter registration drive is this week. It's actually going to start tomorrow. So if you're eligible to vote in November, we're going to be handing out forms. I know you guys, some of you are going to be getting them also. And we're looking at upwards of 175 students we're going to register, which I'm really excited about. And also the second thing, I just wanted to also talk about the musical for a second. It was really, 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 really good. Really good. I know I was laughing from the moment it started to the moment it ended, and I just wanted to say that there are three shows left, as President Hughes said, Friday at 8 and Saturday at 2 and 8, and I hope you guys can go and see it. And that's my report.
Thanks very much, Hunter. Okay, let's get the Board of Education reports. Trustee Rock, start with you.
I'm going to keep the theme of brief. On May 5th, we had the Foundation to Inspire Nyack Schools event. It was well attended, well over close to 200 attendees. The reports are not in yet for the monies raised, but it was a well attended, and we believe we raised funds, and hopefully we can match the $40,000 that we donated earlier at the previous board meeting. So it was a great event. Thanks for all who attended, and look forward to another event next year.
Okay, thanks.
That's all I have.
Michael Mark.
President Hughes. Also very quickly attended the winter sports dinner, which was full of energy and good anecdotes about the spirit of our kids. Great to be in attendance. I did attend the Women in Leadership event at the NIAC Center. Congratulations to Nicole Saiva and the other honorees. They also give a posthumous award to a woman named Natalie Couch, who they spoke about as the first woman in Rockland County to cast a vote. Kim Cross, who is very good at the microphone, brought up some very interesting facts about women getting the right to vote and how many different dates there were. It wasn't just 1920s in the suffrage movement. It went all the way up to 1964 when all African-American women had the right to vote. So it's something that we need to be aware of, and congratulations to Kim on putting together a great event. And also wanted to just recognize that most likely to succeed night, where we had the film shown and the panel. I think that the most important thing about that was all the discussion afterwards. That there was plenty about the movie that was interesting and useful and something that you wanted to do, and plenty that raised questions about how you might want to do other things. But there was no question about the fact that it sparked discussion, and was a very good event, and just wanted to congratulate Jim and the NIAC Center and all the people that put that together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Trustee Tuchter.
Thank you, President Hughes. I want to start out by apologizing for not being able to attend last board meeting. Had a very dear high school friend pass away, and it was a tough one. So thank you all for understanding. And I also want to apologize to everyone at Inspire Night, because I was out of town for casino night, and I very much look forward to next year's. While being out of town, I missed the high school 30 Rotten Scoundrels, and I'll be there this weekend. Look forward to that. That should be exciting, and that's my report. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Jen, Marishina.
Okay, so I want to say a great job on the most likely to succeed screening, especially to Lisa, who did amazing PR to get the room packed. There were so many people there. So it was a great evening. And just, I think, it shared a lot of information that some people just didn't even realize we were talking about as a school district. You know, just, I think people were really impressed hearing Dr. Montesano speak, and it was a great event. Casino night was great. That was wonderful. I miss the NIAC Center brunch. I had to work. I love that event. I really do try to go frequently. I think it's one of my favorite events, and congratulations to Nicole. I really wish I could be there. What I did go to, I just wanted to give a little update. I went last night to the Rockland County School Board Association shared information session, which was, I don't have the flyer in front of me, but it was sort of like opt-in or opt-out. There was a panel of four speakers, Jeannie Marcico, the superintendent of BOCES, another gentleman who was a superintendent in Westchester, I think. Sorry, I don't have the list to say exactly who was there. A representative from NISBA, and then a parent who was part of the opt-out movement. Mm-hmm. So it was a really great informational event. You know, in a nutshell, there was a lot of information sort of about how this New York State is responding to some of the concerns being shared with them over the past couple years regarding testing and its linkage to teacher evaluations, the amount and length of tests. So what I sort of, you know, took away from it were the three speakers, not the parent, were really talking a lot about how they were positive that the state really seemed to be finally hearing some of the concerns brought to them. And I will say, these speakers really felt like that this was the first time in a while that they felt like these concerns were being heard. You know, they spoke very positively of Commissioner Elia and, you know, how she's sort of traveling about and really listening they believed what people are saying. They talked about the testing this year. I think the important things were, in my opinion, were that that all the questions on this year's tests have been reviewed by teachers. You know, so they feel like that there'll be a lot less sort of instances of those questions on a test that people are saying, well, this question made no sense. So that was one of the things that they sort of stressed. The tests are a little shorter, and that there's a moratorium right now, just the moratorium, on linking the test scores to teacher evaluations. So I would say that those speakers felt positive. The opt-out parent, it was great voice to have there. You know, she sort of said, listen, we're glad changes are being made, but as a movement, these are small changes. You know, this is small. We're talking about a shorter test. Well, what is that? 7 questions on math and 1 reading passage. So she sort of said, as a representative of the opt-out movement, we don't feel as a group that our voices have been heard enough. The other speakers, you know, were super respectful of the movement and kind of gave real credit to that movement as being the piece that really possibly got the state listening. So, you know, that's what I was taking away for it. They felt like before there was an opt-out movement that the voices weren't really being heard. So it was a good open discussion, you know, a little bit of good comments from Indigo Golub, one of our students who, you know, really shared her concerns about stress and anxiety in students and in regards to all testing and how do we all look at that, not only as state tests, maybe as, you know, every individual school district and the amount of tests that are given. And people were, all the parents there were really impressed to hear Indigo speak. She's a wonderful speaker. So so that's, I just wanted to share a little recap of that meeting with everybody.
Thanks very much.
That's it.
Thank you. Trustee Marshall?
Thank you. My report is very brief. Everyone has pretty much said everything about most likely to succeed. And again, just to say ditto to our public affairs officer, Lisa, for getting the word out. I think that was very, very impactful to see everyone in that room, as well as the panel. This quote from Dr. Montesano, it resonated with me. I'm just going to read it. We have a highly moral and very serious responsibility to prepare our young people for life after their school years in NIAC. If we accept that the world is rapidly changing, what type of education do our students need? So there's going to be another forum sometime in April to coincide with that presentation, but I just wanted to, again, echo that was probably one of the highlights of this school year, if not the highlight of the school year besides the play, which I'm going to see on Friday. And that is my report.
Thanks very much. Trustee
Irvin. I think I have to actually say everything that Dan Jachter said. I'm sorry I missed the meeting last week. The last time I had foot surgery and I have been sitting in my house for the last 3 weeks doing nothing. So I missed Inspire NIAC. I did send my bids in with the proxy. They didn't do very well.
No.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't win me but one thing. And I gave them like 8 things. So. I guess that's probably good because I always spend way too much money at casino night. Yes, and so as soon as I finish hobbling around, I am going to hobble to the play this weekend. Because then I'll go out and see it. So that's my report. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Dr. Montesano, are there any responses to the citizens' prior proposals, questions, and concerns?
There are none.
Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns this evening? No? Okay, moving on. Dr. Montesano.
Yes, as a mandatory requirement, you have information with regard to, this is the audit committee portion, but simply stated, each year annually as a part of the function of the auditing process, the internal audit review goes through a certain portion of your district finances. This particular report, and you saw the corresponding action plan, basically focused on your fixed assets. And the report, again, that you have provides you with all the information. We're satisfied, and the auditor is satisfied that the internal controls that we have are satisfactory, which is the highest rating that you can have. And the very minor corrective action is already through Carlene's office. And again, I want to, as I hopefully do enough to compliment Carlene and her staff for an outstanding effort.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thank you, Carlene. Okay. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on any of the workshop items on the agenda this evening?
This is your chance to say stuff.
Yeah. Please step up to the mic. State your name for the podcast.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Lynette Marshall. I'm wondering if this is the correct placement for me to address the issue of the breathalyzer in Nyack schools.
It's a workshop item, so okay. Yes, you can.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't blabbering, so I wrote down some things. Speaking as a parent and community member, I'd stand in support of the adoption of breathalyzer use for our students. I do believe the policy should reflect two administrators be present in such cases, and a private location must be secured when it is administered. Please consider those who object are objecting to something which teenagers do not have the right to do, but which they choose to do anyway, specifically to consume alcoholic beverages. Because they are underage, this is an illegal, unsafe, and unhealthy activity for them, which we all know. The issue we are addressing, I feel, is defiance. As an early childhood educator, I regularly encounter defiance, which must be addressed in the best interest of individual children as well as the classes I teach. Some children are more receptive to being redirected when they are defiant than others. Children, be they 2 years old or teenagers, who exhibit defiance should encounter consequences, just as we as adults are subject to consequences for poor choices we make. If I am caught speeding, which I can't believe I ever would do, by an officer, my consequence is having to pay a fine and have points on my license. If our students are choosing to engage in underage drinking and attend school or our school or events, they should encounter the consequence of having to submit to the use of a breathalyzer to determine that they have used alcohol, which again, they are not permitted to do. Our students will continue to make choices, whether to be under the influence, whether to skip school events in order to instead go out drinking, etc. This should not hinder the implementation of a policy which is in their best interest, however unpleasant or unwelcome. Imagine this might actually serve as a deterrent, which is my hope and the hope of those who support this new policy. It is our role as parents and community members to support a process to help ensure the safety and well-being of our children. I want to thank our Board of Ed in advance for not shying away from unpopularity and disapproval, and for, in a pioneering move, voting to pass the adoption of breathalyzer use here in our district and in our area. I urge you to do so in order to show yourselves to be proactive and preemptive, not reactive, and to further exemplify your commitment to what is best for our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Otisano, proposed budget.
Yes, with your permission, President Hughes, I would request that we put item 3.3 in front of the budget presentation. We do have members of our music staff with us tonight. In an effort to get them moving along, I'd like to have the board review that at this time.
You realize it's an ex-board president. She's used to staying late. So. We're doing this for Matt. So. Is that all right?
That's funny.
Okay, so we had a parent who had questioned our code of ethics policy, and the board had asked Dr. Montesano to bring back some information for us on what currently happens. This was around the music program specifically, and we have invited our music chair, our co-chairs, to be here tonight so that the board could ask any questions related to the policy. So does anybody have any questions or concerns at this point in time that they'd like addressed by either Claudette Jimison or Matt Lacera?
It may not be a bad start, really, for the public's benefit as well, is, you know, one of the questions the board had asked was, you know, what the issue is, just so everybody's clear, is that, and the board had changed its policy a year ago over concerns about private employment, with that being where you have staff members engaged in either tutorial services, or in this case, giving private lessons for a fee base. And you added language a year ago in your policy 2160 to ensure that staff members that currently have students on their caseload or assigned in their classes are prohibited from engaging in private employment, if you will. And this particular concern is that, in this case, within a music department, you have either high school staff or, in some cases, middle school staff giving lessons to students that they may eventually grade up to their programs, and does that present a conflict of interest? The board, at the last meeting when we tabled this discussion, had asked me precisely what was the practice of how is the selection of students selected that come up into the high school selected for chamber orchestra, and also how are the selections made for, you know, in the life of an orchestra or band, there's different seating positions, you know, based on first chair or second chair. I think my saxophone playing days, I was like fourth or fifth or second chair, someplace in the back.
Tenth chair.
Where I had to wait for my parents to say, you know, there I am when they came to see me play. So, what I would suggest we have either Matt or Bud, I'm not sure who's prepared to do so, is just kind of review for the board just the overview of how both of those selections are made, both the chair as well as the chamber.
Thank you, Dr. Montesano.
You know,
I would like to have Claudia Cerro.
Your name for the podcast?
Claudia Jefferson. Music liaison for the Nyack District. I think that it would be very proper at this point for Matt to explain to you, because he is our music director at the high school and has worked on this program for many years, and I think he can give you a very clear explanation of how the determination is made as to what chair and what seat students have. So, Matt?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Matt Lucero. I'm the high school orchestra director, and in terms of how we select students for the chamber orchestra, there's actually pretty comprehensive audition process that we go to help let students know if they would be able to handle the specific repertoire selections of it. So around late May, we actually have students prepare a solo. There's a theory kind of evaluation and a questionnaire that helps us and a panel, not just myself. It's actually the string teachers, and sometimes we are able to invite some of their music teachers from the district to help evaluate and fill out forms to give their recommendation of whether or not the student can do that and can be in the class. We then take that list of students we suggest over to Nicole Saeva, who will then sign and approve it, and then we take it to guidance. Now, there are times that some parents or students may want to be in the ensemble despite the recommendations of the staff, and we honor the open enrollment policy to let them be in it, but understanding that, hello, you know, we let them know that they may need additional help and assistance in it. Now, in terms of private lessons and instructions, RCMEA, that's the Rockland County Music Educators Association, has a list of students that, not students, a list of teachers in the county, both that are working in it as teachers or also just as private instructors, who we have referenced students to and parents to, and also just through word of mouth, we've been able to recommend, the students have recommended and the parents have recommended teachers to different people. Now, if someone questions me about someone's ability who happens to be in staff, you know, I'll tell them, yes, so-and-so may be a qualified teacher, that we're lucky to have them employed in a district as a specialist, but we don't go out there and endorse specific people within our department or even around here. We just let them know that where they can find a list and where they can get information. If you have additional questions, you can forward them to me, and I'll be happy to address them.
Matt, I do have one question. You mentioned that if a parent or student feels they, you know, we basically have an open enrollment policy in all AP classes, honors classes in the district. That's a standing policy the board endorses. The last couple of years, have you had any students that have not been recommended for chamber through the audition process that you just spoke about that have then been a part of your chamber orchestra?
Yes, we have. We've actually, there are at least four students who have had that situation, and the parents have, you know, come to me and requested meetings and they've let me know and expressed their concerns that they do want their child to be part of this and that they're willing to accept the fact that they may struggle through the course, but they would like them to be in there, and we've always honored their request every time.
Okay, thank you. Any board questions?
You said the Rockland County Music Education Association has a list? Is it on a website somewhere?
Yes, you can visit RCMEI, I believe it's .org, and that's an organization that just takes any sort of private instructor in the district and just posts their names there and what instrument they may play. Some parents also just go on different districts' websites to see what instruments those teachers play in those districts, and that's how they just call around and ask and see if they would be interested in teaching their child.
Okay, so there's obviously names from other districts and other professionals in the community.
Yes, in Rockland.
Associated, per se, with the district. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Michael Mock?
So, if there are music teachers mm-hmm. in our district who are teaching students in our district, did they come to that position through that RCMEA list?
I can't speak on behalf of those teachers, but I do know that sometimes they just come up and ask you, hey, would you be interested in working with my child? And, you know, we don't solicit it, but if they ask, you know, this is something that we do off of school hours and we work out an agreement with the parents and ourselves, but it's not something we go out and solicit ourselves.
And that, just a point of clarification, that is really consistent with other disciplines you have. If you recall, we had a situation where the guidance department in the high school were issuing lists for people that might, you know, teachers we have that might teach tutor algebra or Spanish, and the board, if you recall, last year had put an end to that. But the way it occurs now is you may have parents that know of either their, you know, their other child had that teacher, and they may go to them, kind of like a word of mouth. So my point is that's pretty consistent with your other disciplines, to my knowledge, in the district.
Okay.
So we spoke about this a little bit last time at the meeting, because conflict of interest, our conflict of interest policy speaks of specific conflicts, but also the perception of conflict. I'm not sure that I have the language exactly right.
Yeah, it does.
But there are ways in which it's consistent in our policy for this practice to take place. The procedures that you have for selecting students into certain school music organizations, we didn't go into that before, and we've heard a little bit about that now, that there are committees that select. And it's not done by any one particular teacher.
It's a collection of teachers and professionals all in the district of music teachers who give their recommendations. We present a list of students who we believe would be able to handle what we're going to have in the class. It doesn't say yes you're in or no you're not. It's just of all the students who choose to audition, it's our recommendations of whether or not they would be able to do it.
And once they're in, it's my understanding that in bigger sections of the organization, of the organization, like the strings, there's a rotation of students sitting in different chairs or spacing the kids of ability throughout the section to help out.
That's true. What we do is there are certain positions that are peer selected, like for example a concertmaster or a section leader, and that's done with the students to say, hello, this person will be the one I will go to help communicate things that we as a section have a concern with. During performances and rehearsals, we do rotate throughout, and you'll see that there are many performances and photos where the seating's not the same within it. Obviously, there's specific ones like the concertmaster or a section leader who is up there helping lead the group. But within it, every single student actually gets a chance to sit in that first chair seat during rehearsal. Sometimes in performances, there are students who can't be there, and we like to give everyone an opportunity to have that chance at leadership and to really lead the ensemble.
When you say concertmaster is peer selected, what's the procedure?
Well, generally, we, as part of the committee, would recommend so-and-so would be a great choice for this, because the responsibilities of concertmaster go beyond just being technically proficient. It's also someone who helps lead sectionals, organize things with the students. They do a lot of off-site rehearsing that I'm not involved with. It they just like to do together. So at the beginning of the year, sometimes the students, even before that begins, they're saying, we believe so-and-so should be this or that position of it. And if they have questions about it, and if the student doesn't want to accept that spot, I'm not just speaking concertmaster, it could be a section leader, they could turn it down, or they rotate, or some people want to do it together. And we work as a team to produce a great ensemble.
Okay, and the only other question that I had is in terms of outside the district, if the district is recommending students for things like all county or all state, organizations, what's the procedure for that?
Okay, so in order to participate in any sort of RCMEA or NISMA area all-state or all-county or any of those sorts of festivals, a student has to complete a NISMA solo performance in May. There are some exceptions to that, such as in Coral in the beginning, since they don't actually participate yet, we can recommend. But what we do is we try to get as many students involved in our district who would be willing to take on a NISMA solo. And that's something that's done extracurricular out of the school day. In order to be selected, you have to complete that. And then we take every student who participates in any sort of NISMA solo event and recommend them to this event and towards selection. And then at an RCMEA festival with our conference day, there's a whole procedure that the RCMEA holds us to. There's no preferential treatment towards teachers. And we can't push a student through. They actually rank their scores in a very specific protocol, and there's a whole ranking system that works out so that all the teachers in the district, or in the county, oversee the process to see which students are selected for those groups.
Thank you. I think that just the one word to clarify is when you say recommend. You know, when you use the word, you know, we recommend these students to go up there. Is there a weight to your recommendation, or is it that you're recommending this to the student that he go, or?
Well, we obviously ask the student and the family if they're interested first, but I do my best to recommend. I always recommend every student that does an NISMA solo, but it's their choice if they want me to include them in the nomination list. So we don't turn someone away because their score is too low or too high. It's just if you've been part of this, you know, we want them to take advantage of that opportunity that they've worked for and encourage them to try out and be considered for that by the county at RCMEA.
Okay, I'll think of other things. But
so in terms of the solos, just so I understand, everybody's eligible to take the solos?
NISMA solos. Any NISMA student solos. Can participate in NISMA solos. In There's
the,
no...
That's the choice of the student.
That's the choice of the student.
Okay. And once they've got that and they have a score, they're eligible to for all county, all
yes.
state.
By completing a NISMA solo, they can then be considered for acceptance into an RCMEA, all county, or all state sort of a ensemble.
Further question?
Is that score for the solo done by committee or by one person?
The score is done by people who go through a screening process that are not district teachers or anyone in Rockland. You actually have to go through an entire training session for it, and the people who evaluate them are not from Rockland. And that's something that they do statewide to make sure that there's never a conflict of interest.
Thank you.
Trustee Marshall.
So Matt, so that's with respect to the NISBA and the state competition, but with respect to the chamber, those folks are audition and they don't have to go through a screening process. The audition gets them in, is that correct?
The audition, well, the audition is for us to see if we recommend if they can be on the ensemble. And if we find that they may need improvement in a certain thing, we do let them know privately. But if your child wants to be in chamber orchestra, you know, we do honor open enrollment, and you're welcome to be in it, but you'll have to, you know, make sure you can maintain the work that we have to put into it to be able to put on our performances.
And the committee is comprised, again, of yourself and whom else?
We have the entire string faculty, and then usually I can bring in someone from another discipline so that we can have a separate point of view who's not a string specialist.
Okay, and is it likely that some of those committee members also have served in the role as tutors to some of the prospective?
They may, or they may not. It's on a case by case scenario.
Right.
It depends.
But it's
on
likely
status.
That they could.
It
have.
Could be. Yes.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Well, I have a comment too, but go ahead, Dan.
Dan Jackson.
I appreciate the explanation. I'd love to hear from our attorney, from Ralph, maybe a broader New York State kind of look at
sure.
how our policy, how it relates to
sure. So just simply, I want to start off with the private employment section of the policy, just to read that for the podcast and for the board to remind you what Jim was referring to before. You have Board Policy 2160, which is your school district officer and employee code of ethics policy. You have a paragraph in there, paragraph number 6, that refers to private employment, and it states, a board member, officer, or employee shall not engage in, solicit, negotiate for, or promise to accept private employment when that employment or service creates a conflict with or impairs the proper discharge of his or her official duties. And then this is the sentence that was added last year. without limiting the generality of the foregoing, administrators, teachers, and teaching assistants shall not be involved in any private employment arrangements to tutor any students during the time that the students is slash are on their caseload or assigned to their classes. So that's the section of the policy at issue. I've reviewed that board policy 2160, particularly the section on private employment. There is a general requirement in the New York State General Municipal Law for boards of education to adopt a code of ethics and to have a code of ethics that in part addresses private employment, which your board policy obviously does. In my opinion, your board policy, as it's currently written, is in compliance with the law. I believe the policy should focus, as it does, on the time period that is currently in existence, as it exists at that time period when the circumstances arise. And I don't recommend that the board change the policy to address private employment that might one day in the future lead to a potential conflict of interest. I think that it becomes too attenuated or overbroad based on circumstances that or a series of events that may or may not occur.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Trustee Marshall. Did you raise your hand? So thank you for clarifying that. The overarching opening of that particular code of ethics, can you read that first paragraph, please?
First paragraph?
Please, yeah.
A board member, officer, or employee shall not engage in, solicit, negotiate for, or promise to accept private employment.
No. The overarching, the opening paragraph of 2160.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry, I wasn't
That's
clear.
That's okay. The Board of Education is committed to avoiding any situation in which the existence of conflicting interests of any board member, officer, or employee may call into question the integrity of management or operation of the school district. Is that the one you were referring to?
Yeah.
Okay. Any further comments?
I'm good.
I know I came in late.
Could you state your name,
Rick Tannenbaum? So I heard everything that Mr. Lucero said, but I wanted to interject a little bit of how it works from a parent's perspective and how it's worked in my experience. When my daughter entered the eighth grade, she was given a list that made no mention of this Rockland County Music Educators Association to go to a website and look for a tutor elsewhere in the district. What she was given was a list with Mr. Lucero's name on it, with Ms. Winsey's name on it, with Ms. Johnson's name on it, basically, and was handed these names as the tutors that she would need in private instruction. I've never heard of the Rockland County Music Educators Association. Nobody directed me to a list. We engaged a tutor who's a retired teacher from another district, and we had that relationship with this tutor before the eighth grade. But to give you some scale of the scope of what the conflict is and what the potential conflict is, my daughter takes 2 one-hour lessons a week of private instruction at $50 an hour. It's $100 a week for 38 weeks. It's $3,800. If Mr. Lucero is teaching 5 students, he's earning about $20,000 extra a year on top of where he's at on his salary. If the other teachers are doing it, they're probably earning something comparable. I don't know what his rates are, but this is not a small amount of money that creates a conflict. This is a substantial investment in every child's education. My daughter has received a perfect NISMA score. Every time that she does the instruction, she has gotten a 28 out of 28 every single time. And what we've been told is that it's not a recommendation to get to all county, that it's an advocacy for it. We feel that our daughter has never been advocated for. With her perfect score, she has not been able to participate in all county. Well, I believe that the students that Mr. Lucero teaches and the students that the other teachers are tutoring are offered these opportunities that we're not getting. Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, also, you know, this year was the first year that there was reportedly no competition for first chairs. But what we were told specifically by Ms. Jemison and by the principal, David Johnson, is that next year, when they enter the high school, that this policy of non-competitive for chairs no longer exists, and that there is a competition for chairs, and that the decision for placement in the chairs is made by the teachers. we sat in on a meeting, I guess about 2 months ago or whatever it was, and we understood that in the eighth grade, it's a non-competitive open policy. You could sit anywhere you want. The teacher encourages people to move to different places. But once you get into the ninth grade, that it is competitive. And you know, I look at this policy, and what I see is, you know, I mean, I don't think it's a perceived conflict of interest. I think it's an actual conflict of interest. When you have teachers earning thousands and thousands of dollars to advocate and place students that they're either teaching and teaching and will be in their classes, inevitably, I mean, there's only so many teachers, and every student moves through the teachers. You know, whether you're in the elementary schools, and you move to the middle school, Ms. Yee is going to be your teacher. When you move to the high school, Mr. Lucero is going to be your teacher. You know, the idea that some parents have this financial relationship with him in the thousands of dollars, you know, leads me as a parent to think that if I don't have that relationship, my daughter is not going to get the same advantages. And what I've seen, based on her perfect scores on NISBA and her not getting into all counties, I don't see advocacy. I don't see recommendations. I don't see anything other than the fact that I'm not paying the teachers. And the policy was better the way it was when it was an outright bar, because of these conflicts of interest are real, but because in the music program in particular, the conflict is inevitable because every student is going to move into that teacher's level, and whether they've hired them, paid them or not, is going to be dispositive of what opportunities are given to them. You could call it recommending. I've been told it's advocacy. And it's like a pay to play, and you know, we're not gonna change our daughter's teacher to have these advantages. And standing here today, I don't believe that even though she's had perfect scores in this minute, she's gonna have any of these same advantages. Mm-hmm. So just to reiterate, these lists, that's a fiction to take the burden off the exclusivity that the students are being told which teachers to hire. I mean, I don't have the piece of paper with me today, but she was handed the very first day of school the names of the teachers to hire as tutors, and it was the district's teachers. So, I mean, you're being pressured right from the very first day to pay, you know, your own teachers extra money for tutoring. So, I don't really have much else to say. I know I've said some of this before, and you know you all weren't here before, but the conflict is not just perceived, it's a real conflict, and the district should do something about it. I mean, the fact that there's some letter of some inclusion that gives them an out is just wrong. You know, the goal of the district should be to avoid any conflict of interest. And if there's so much clarity that every student is going to be in these different levels with all of these teachers, the conflict is real and the district should go back to the former policy. As far as being selected, I mean, there is this special chamber that travels that is not every student, it's not open to everybody. You have to compete for it. And, you know, if you're not paying to play, you just may not get into that.
Okay.
I have a question. I'll let you go first because I've been...
After listening to Rick speak, I am disconnected. Can you just explain a little bit more? Because my kids have not done any musical stuff, so NISBA and all this is very new to me. So do a lot of kids who get perfect scores not make it into counties? Like, for someone who doesn't know, you hear if you get a perfect score, I would just assume that all those kids make it to counties. Is that the next?
There are different levels. There's all county, area, all state, and all eastern. And in order to be considered for that, yes, you do have to complete a NISMA solo. Now, here's the thing. There are actually six, and if you want to consider the all-state level, seven levels of NISMA solos you can compete in. So a student could compete at level 1 or 2 and score a perfect 28, but then when you go into levels 3 and 4 and 5, 6, they're scored out of 100, and RCMEA, the Rockland County Music Educators Association, actually has a list which I provided to Dr. Montesano, which I'd be happy to show any of you. That ranks the student's scores relative to how they compare to, let's say, a student who competes at level 6 NISMA solo versus a level 2 or a level 3. So just completing a NISMA level 2 or 3 or any sort of score and getting a perfect score doesn't necessarily guarantee you, because of the fact that it's dependent on what the scores are in the entire county. I may have mentioned it, and I think you may have missed this, but I want to repeat this, that we do take time to recommend every student, and as much as we love to advocate, we do advocate, and we put every student's name who is have ever participated in a NISMA solo on this list that we recommend, that RCMEA, Rockland County Music Educators Association, can produce and show you the students that, to prove that we do recommend them. And the thing is, at the end of the day, it's not just who we recommend. It comes down to how that is ranked, and it's outside of our school district. Rockland County Music Educators Association decides how that works, and as much as we would like to push someone through, their systems in place with that organization to prevent that from happening. If a teacher forgets to put in a student's name as a recommendation, unfortunately they can't be considered. So it's on us, and we do a really great job of doing this, making sure that we put the information in it, and we keep records of all students' NISMA scores so that if they ever need to be referenced, we can produce them on demand.
So you're saying categorically that we've put everybody through, but it's when they do the ranking at the organization that someone may not quite make it?
That is correct. It is not done by district employees. Right? It is not done by anyone here in NIAC. Okay. It's done by how the organization has a protocol.
It's done by that organization, but we've put everyone through who qualify. Sorry, Rick. Hold on. Rick, hold on.
Okay. And I understand there may be a misunderstanding about the advocacy. Yes, we love to recommend students, and like I mentioned before, we always try to recommend every student who completes a solo, and it's up to the student and their families if they would be happy to have their child's name recommended. But at the end of the day, it's not the teacher's choice whether or not they get accepted into this festival. It comes down to the protocols in place by the RCMEA organization, not by the teachers here in NIAC. And I think that's where the misunderstanding may be.
Trustee Marshall.
And you're also saying that there have been students put forward with perfect scores that have not made it,
The cut. There are many students. Okay. And it's not just that there are very different levels of all-county orchestras. We've got intermediate all-county, junior all-county, and senior all-county. Mm-hmm. And they're for different grades because you don't want to, you want to be able to have students of the same grade be able to participate. But there are sometimes students get accepted into intermediate all-county that don't make it into junior all-county who then make it into senior L County, and it has nothing to do with how we advocate. It comes down to the scores and the scores of the people and of the students who are also being recommended in the entire county, not exclusive to NIAC.
All right, I want to just kind of get back to the issue of the compensation. And Ralph, this is to you. I don't really have the history of this. Why was that sentence added in paragraph 6 without limiting the generality of the foregoing? Was that an add, or that's always been there?
So that was an addition that was made here in NIAC.
Okay.
It was customized for you folks at the request of the Board of Education is how it got added and how I drafted it last year.
That was the last year's
that
add.
That was last
okay.
year.
Okay. All right, got you.
And just so that it's clear, that sentence doesn't allow doesn't change any particular practice in terms of the district. What that purpose of that sentence was to make clear that whatever may or may not have gone on in the past in the district, that tutoring was not to occur as private employment for students who were on current caseloads. It was to address that particular situation. So I'm not saying that occurred in the past, but mm-hmm. what had come up last year was questions about tutoring arrangements, questions about under what circumstances were teachers providing tutoring to students, private tutoring to students, and what the board, as I understood it at that time and what I drafted, was to make it clear that if private tutoring was going to occur, you were going to continue to allow it, but make it clear that it was not going to be allowed under the circumstances where it was for students on the current caseload or in the current classes of the particular teacher. And
thank you.
That was viewed as being a violation of this policy and
all right.
inappropriate. Correct.
All right. In their caseload or not in their caseload, my only other thing that would just raise an eyebrow is those students who simply cannot afford to be tutored at all. And do those make...
I can answer.
You want to speak to that?
Yes. Okay. Luckily, we do have an organization, a parent booster group known as MusicWorks. And what they do is they do raise funds to provide students in this community with scholarship lessons when they are, if those students do express a need. And they've done an amazing job being able to do this for students for years and years now. And this is something that's ongoing. So for those students who aren't able to afford...
Good.
They provide it.
And do those make it in chamber, some of those?
There are some in that ensemble who are currently on scholarship lessons.
Okay. And then there's some young ladies here. I would like to, if they're here for this issue, I would like to hear from you if you're here to talk about this issue. Okay.
Jen Moschino.
Just one quick question differently. The list of tutors that Rick mentioned, did we change that, Dr. Montesano?
One part I don't want to respond to tonight because I really don't. I mean, I certainly don't doubt Mr. Tannenbaum's representation that the list was given with just our teachers' names. And that if that is a practice, that does obviously need to stop because that would be consistent with what I thought we had stopped.
About, that's right.
Right.
I don't know that the board would be uncomfortable with the list that would contain your teachers along with other teachers, or simply refer all teachers, all parents to the website if they so desire, you know, which is kind of takes it out of your hallways and out of the hands of your music teachers completely. But that's something I think the board should, you know, weigh in on at some point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other commentary?
Okay, so if you could take that back, Dr. Montesano.
I have a note about that to make sure that we...
Okay, fine, because I agree with you, Jen. I was thinking the same thing.
Right.
That we had something around that last year. Okay. Thank you very much, Matt. Thank you very much, Claudette, for being in attendance. Thank you for that. Views of the board. So we have the policy. We've been through this. Is there any feel to keeping the policy as it is, changing it? Does anyone have a feel for where we go with this next? Michael?
Well, I feel like it's a little more complicated than I was thinking at first. The idea of the all or nothing, you just shouldn't do it, seemed like a clear idea, but I couldn't get past the idea of our very successful string program in the summertime. And does that mean that if kids take the summer strings program and our teachers are there, does that represent a conflict of interest? And in a way, it's the same problem. But I don't think they should be excluded from the summer program, and I don't think that the teachers should be excluded from it. It's successful, and it helps the music program, and it's good for the community. So I don't think it's a black and white issue. I do think that the RCMEA list is probably the way to go in making sure that we're not handed a list of teachers just in this district. And for now, I'd be more interested in keeping things as they are with the changes that we had made here, because it is too hard to predict whether you're going to be a student in the high school or not. You might give the thing up. You might become a lacrosse player. And of course, you might not. It's very likely that you'll go on and continue with the music program. But given what legal counsel was saying, I don't know how you make a workable policy
The future.
To cover those kinds of exigencies. You have to cover what exists. If we can come up with some other language or we can have other conversations about this, I think that the things that Matt outlined about committee and about some selection processes being outside the purview of the district are important to know. And I think that adds weight to leaving the policy as it is at the moment.
I just wanted to say also, this applies in the sports arena as well, because I know that my son signed up for the baseball camp that was held by some of our coaches and teachers during the summer. And I guess in theory, you know, now they know my kid, and so if they ever turn around and he wants to try out for baseball, you know, he's potentially going to be confronting a coach. So it's not just the music program. It has this tentacles apply in a lot of places because a lot of our teachers and our coaches are involved in clinics and summer camps.
So does the policy cover sports? Are teachers participating in sports programs?
Well, it certainly would if, let's just take a scenario. You know, in today's world of athletics, it's not unusual for kids to have a pitching coach or a hitting coach or a stealing coach or, you know. And if, in fact, we had, let's say, a freshman or, you know, a high school baseball player on one of our teams, and one of our coaches was involved in private employment with that student, yes, that would be prohibited because that's a school-sponsored event, and he is, that student is a member of his program at that time, so I would interpret it as that would be.
So it covers it. So if your child is being coached by this kid at school, the kid's being coached by the coach at school, that same coach can't give instruction. So that's covered by the policy.
But I am aware of what, while these are not school-sponsored camps, that you do have situations, or in that matter, you have some of our coaches. Hal Stone, as an example, is a local coach. You know, he also was the modified baseball coach for a while. So, you know, putting language in the policy, I think, to your point, would that create a violation? Or, I mean, I think they're kind of scenarios you'd have to really weigh.
No, but the point I raised that similar because Dominic is going up through and taking Hal's summer sports camp. Potentially, at some point, he may show up in high school.
Yeah.
Or in, you know, middle school and be on that particular person's team, similar to the music scenario where you might have a teacher that you know, was tutoring a student in elementary school in music and then ultimately ends up in the music program at the high school. So it's...
I think the sports scenario, is Hal teaching in what capacity? As a private tutor or part of an organized...
Well,
it's a camp.
It's a camp, but it's camp. You know,
yeah.
you pay for the camp.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Right?
So yeah,
but it's the same concept.
It's the same concept.
I mean, look, I'm a pitching coach too, so
yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's a big distinction if it's
Trustee Rock.
I think the language is crafted with purpose. I wasn't here when it was crafted, but it's just from a slippery slope is trying to legislate the future is difficult. We've got a teacher contract coming up already, and last time I checked, I don't think we pay the world's greatest salaries. And so from a teacher's ability to make some money outside of their compensation package, it just gets difficult and more difficult if you're trying to limit anything they can do and you're trying to avoid every single form of conflict, it just becomes very, very difficult to do. So what do you try to do to mitigate that? You try to do things by committee. That's why you have a committee. We heard mention of outside body that weighs in on this committee. Maybe that's something we can do to help mitigate. Is there something more around committee, outside body? Is there something more we can do around maybe it's elementary versus middle school and middle school's too close to high school? There may be some things there we can explore. I like the idea of lists. Making it independent, or we just don't give out any lists, and you always have to go to an independent website and get your list of teachers, and that's how it's done, no matter whether it's sports, music, or whatever. And that way we take ourselves out of trying to legislate conflicts, because once we go down that path, we may get ourselves into unintended circumstances, which is nobody can tutor anybody. Now you have no tutors for anything. And I don't think that's the intention we want to go down, but that could be a consequence of trying to over-legislate.
Okay, thanks.
But just to post a scenario, if you're talking about tutoring in math, you're talking about tutoring in science, there's no competition element in that.
Absolutely there is. I disagree with you.
Okay, so explain the competition element in terms of science and math. Like, I have a student struggling in science.
We have a science competition that happens for the district where kids are doing projects and against...
No, strike that. I'm strictly talking about tutoring because you have kid A who is not passing this class. Therefore, kid A needs a tutor. They're not competing in a science fair or
correct.
Anything like that.
You're going to impact that. Correct.
As opposed to performance... And performance. You have a child that basically not so great in baseball, but now they're going to be tutored, they're going to be in a clinic, and that same clinic sponsor is also a coach. You know, not necessarily in the future, but perhaps currently. I think that's what you just represented. So, and then you have a similar scenario in terms of performance, where you have in this ecosystem of music, you have a number of teachers who, rightly so, they want to be compensated because it's their time, but the question on the floor is, do their students, and you're saying, no, they don't, Matt, do their students have a unique advantage over other students? And the answer that we've been given is, no, not necessarily. So that's really, it is a little different.
I think it's actually one further.
Go ahead.
He said no, not necessarily, and it's an independent body outside of the district.
I'm not talking about that competition.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about those who, I'm separating chamber orchestra from that competition, which you're right.
Right.
That's a whole body outside. But I'm saying in this ecosystem as far as chamber, and you're saying no, they don't have it. I won't answer the question for you. You could
yeah, I mentioned this earlier, and I want to just remind everyone again that, yes, we do have auditions, and there is a committee, and there's a whole process. And I just want to make sure everyone understands that upon the committee's recommendations and after we submit this list to our principal and guidance department, that parents and students who are interested in having their child enrolled, despite whether they were on the list or not, of recommendations have always been honored. And Dr. Montesano mentioned this earlier to me, and I had informed him that, yes, there have been four students in my time at the high school that have asked, and we've honored it every time.
Good.
And we've always just let them know that here are the certain things we would recommend that they work on to help to be able to keep up, but we've never turned anyone away from that ensemble. And I understand there may be a misunderstanding about how people get in that group, but I need everyone to hopefully understand that we don't promote it to be exclusive. We just want to make sure that the students in there are prepared and understand what they're getting themselves into and what they signed up for.
Thank you. I accept that. Thank you.
Thanks. Just one little suggestion that you may consider as a board, just to ensure your policy as it exists. I don't know, you know where the board is at exactly with any other additional changes, but one change you may want to add just for clarity, just in lieu of the conversation we had at coaches, you may want to just add coaches into that sentence as well.
Yeah.
Just to make it clear.
Good idea.
Yep. That's a good idea.
It says teachers only?
It says administrators, teachers, and teaching assistants. So there's sometimes
okay.
that you
yeah.
may have coaches that are not necessarily administrators,
yeah.
teachers, and teaching assistants. So I could make a change that says administrators, teachers, teaching assistants, and coaches shall not be involved in any private employment arrangements to tutor any students during the time that the students is or are on their caseload assigned to their classes or on their teams.
Okay. Anybody uncomfortable with that?
No.
I don't know. I think we need more research. I'd like to hear from coaches on that piece. Because if you add that in, I don't know what that means. I just immediately thought of if you're doing an AAU sports team, baseball travel team, that kind of thing, which is really independent of the school district, and what you may be doing is putting the student at a disadvantage if that's a team.
Well, the only distinction, I mean, we can sort of look into it, but an AAU team is usually a summertime event.
No, year round.
And we have coaches that are.
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely you do.
Well.
But it's not a conflict, it's a different, you're not getting an advantage, it's for that student.
To get play,
because they're trying to do a showcase to get into college. So that student wants to be on that AAU team.
Well, how about this? Let me have Joe.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably want to hear from the coaching community before we, and that's my only point, is you probably want to hear from the coaching community before making that.
That's right. All right. Hold on a minute, Ray, if you could please. Hold on. Any other comments on Dan? I think you look like you want to say something. Trust me, Joe.
thank you, President. I think that we have to be careful about what path we go down, and I certainly think that we should be consistent in how we, if there's a list, that the list be all-inclusive, not be exclusive. I think if it's a website, preferably that's out of our district, where we encourage, if our teachers want to be on that list, then they get on the list, and that's fine. And that's, the list is given, you know, it's accessible to all. I think it's a little deeper than that, though. You have to have trust in your teachers, and I think that we should. We do. And Mr. Lucero's, I thought, very comprehensive analysis and explanation of what they do is sufficient to me. So I'm okay with it, except for the list part.
The changes on this.
But that's it.
Trustee Mark.
I just want to add one point to Dan's thought. I obviously would not presume to speak for the music staff of the district, but I would presume to speak as a professional musician for 45 years who has cast shows and has a broad resume and has had students. It just simply isn't in my best interest to put a student of mine ahead of another student who isn't a student of mine if my student doesn't have the ability of the other student. and to encourage the student that I'm that I have to do their best and achieve their best is my goal. But if I'm putting together a musical organization, my first job is to listen objectively to the quality of the performance that's in front of me and judge that. And I've even heard tonight that isn't done on a subjective basis by staff members here who are just looking at students that they might be teaching. And I understand all about the thing that they might be teaching them later. The first goal is to listen to the performance and listen to the ability and use that in my judgment. And that speaks to the point that Dan was making about having the trust in your music department that's what they're doing. I do think that when we go to the concerts and we see what's written about this district, which is an unusual public school district in terms of the quality of music, that I think it's that I have a high confidence level in how our teachers are performing their duties. And I think that carries a lot of weight in terms of how we look at this policy. I'm not saying that there isn't something to be concerned when you talk about conflict of interest. It's a very important thing to think about. But that the judgment of ability is the first goal here, and I think that's what's going on, first and foremost.
Okay, I tend to agree with you, but I don't think it's a judgment. I think it's avoidance of conflict of interest.
Sure.
How Matt has articulated it to us, and the explanation around the NISBA component and the Allstate to me removes that and puts us up. The fact that there's an open enrollment policy around the chamber orchestra, mm-hmm. and that there's never mm-hmm. been a denial of a kid mm-hmm. in the chamber orchestra says to me that we're doing everything to avoid that conflict is how I read this. What I'd like to see happen, now I'd like to just go back to this piece on the list. Can we put this into policy? Because it seems that we said it and it didn't happen. Mm. Can that get put into policy, or is that
something?
Yeah, that's a good
just
point.
Just for clarity, it's there that because we talked about this last year as well. And I know some students. I was joking the other day. I mistakenly asked the math teacher for recommendation. She says, nope, I don't give lists. I'm like, good answer. So, clearly it's a case that they know they don't do this. So, but if we could make it policy so that it's clear across the board mm-hmm. that, you know, we it's not what we do, right? So, what do we feel about the coach? So we feel we want to put the coaches in, but we want to wait for Joe to come back? So
I think we need to hear from the sports.
Do we need to put the coaches in?
There are some ways to, even, we'll do that, but, we can even add, and Ralph just mentioned, just simply by adding engagement in employment with agreements with parents and guardian would, prevent the AAU team idea, meaning there's probably ways to craft
it.
But give us a chance to look at it. Let's
okay.
see what
right.
motivation
that's,
it actually
that's
is.
Fine. Okay. All right, if you could take that away.
So I could read
Rick, sorry, your name again.
Oh, Rick Tannenbaum again. So I could read the handwriting on the wall, and I understand the issues that you're raising. But when you're examining a conflict of interest, the people to ask about the conflicts are not the people who are benefiting financially from them. It's people who have no interest in the outcome. To ask somebody who's earning, and just respectfully, this is one of the teachers in this district are among the highest paid in the entire state. But to ask the people who are benefiting from the financial arrangement if they think that there's no conflict, I mean, that question in itself just indicates that you're not really tuned into the notion of a conflict of interest.
I don't understand the statement
if you're
at all.
Trying to determine
who are we asking?
To ask Mr. Lucero, who has four or five students.
We've asked him to ask the coach. We've asked him to explain what goes on. That's
yes,
all we've
and,
asked.
And
the
he's
process.
The person who's parsing between recommendation and advocacy. He's the person who's parsing between, yes, there are students who have perfect scores on this one but don't get recommended or advocated. He's the person who has students who did not get perfect scores in NISMA, who went to all county. So, you know, when you're fact-finding and you're trying to find out, is there a real conflict of interest here, you don't ask the person who has the conflict of
interest. But we're not asking him if there's a conflict of interest. We're asking him to explain the process so we can understand what we need to do.
But you're asking a person who's...
No. I'm asking him to explain what he does. And that's factual. There's nothing. There's no opinion in that. He's given us a statement of fact. We're assessing it. He's given us a statement of fact. We asked, what's the process? He's told us the process. You may not like our discussion, I understand that. But I just want to make clear what Mr. Lucero has done this evening. Yeah? Would you agree?
I don't agree. I don't agree at all. I think that you are asking him for his opinion as to whether he could exercise his position fairly to all students, whether they pay him or not. So and what he's saying is there are procedures in place, in his opinion, that make that possible. And I've heard what he said. You've heard what he said. There's a record of what he said. So I thank you for your time. And whatever you do, I guess, we'll be whatever you do.
Okay. Thank you. State your name for the record.
Claudette Jemerson. I would just like to say that the statements that Matt Lucero made, I agree with 100%. I am one who has taught in this district for many years. I have never taught a student privately in this district, so I am not going to benefit from anything that Matt had said. But I do agree with what we have done with the staff that we have. I think that there's fairness with the staff. When we have been questioned about students, certain students, and the position that they have, I have been on those committees. I have listened to those students play, and I have been very objective in my opinion in what the outcome should be in those matters. So I think the statements that he said are very accurate. They're accurate for our district. I stand behind our music staff. I think that one of the stipulations that you should all really remember is that any of the students that are taken privately, and there are very few students in this district that take privately from our teachers, but the stipulation is that those students cannot be in their class, and they are not in their class. So I am happy with the process and the way it works in NIAC, and I have listened to your discussions. I think it's been an excellent one, and I hope that we will continue to allow students, teachers, to work either during their off time with students that need their assistance and whose parents want their assistance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Ralph, if you could draft the list into the policy. Well, let's wait until we get together, consult, let's see what we'll do with the coaches and bring Joe back. Thanks very much.
Right. Thank you.
For that. Matt, Claudette, Barbara, thank you for being here. Much appreciated. No, you can stay.
More than welcome to stay.
Thank you for that.
Budget snacks. You want to talk about budget for middle school?
Yeah.
Karen. Thank you.
Good night. Karen. Can I make a suggestion that we move 3.4 up because those students are not here for the budget?
That's what we're discussing.
Oh, that's what we're discussing. Okay.
Okay, right. So 3.3. Dr. Montesano, there's a suggestion that we move item 3.4 up, the breathalyzer testing.
You guys really don't want to hear about the
I believe we have some students here who want to address the breathalyzer policy. No? Okay. No. So you just come to our board meeting?
Let's
do this, if I may. Let me go back to 3.1 and ask if there are any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on workshop items to give anyone here an opportunity to come forward. If you could step forward and state your name for the podcast, please.
Hi, Sophia Marshall, NIAC High School alum, 2011. So just to provide a little bit of pretext here, about a year and a half out of college, I'm 22 years old, and I will be traveling down to Savannah in a couple days to celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and I'm not Irish as far as I know. So, but yet, I stand here in support of this proposal, and part of me is kind of surprised that this is still on the table and that hasn't been, you know, moved forward. But just to provide a little background, so when I was a senior and I was on the soccer team, I was at a football game and having a great time, and a couple of my teammates came up to me and they were like, "Are you drunk?" And I kind of, you know, stepped back and I was like, "No, I'm just having a good time." So with that being said, there's three points that I would like to make with this whole proposal here. One being that with the points in place, the procedure in place, that's very clearly outlined. I read it. I highlighted it. I know what's in place. These events are essentially about community, school togetherness, etc. Not so much a forum for drinking. However, given you know where high school students are in life, it's really the only option in some cases. You know, there's the quote that you know, you people say alcohol doesn't help you have any fun in the same way that you know you don't need running shoes to run, but it helps. And I've heard that you know a couple of times. However, I think it's a reflection on what the events are doing to draw students in aside from just being a forum for drinking. And the other piece of this is that everything outlined in terms of the, you know, the signs that the discerning faculty members will be looking for are the same points that myself and my coworkers in the bars that I've been bartending in for 3 years look for as well. So eventually you go from drinking at sporting events and school functions to drinking in bars and clubs, which is really the proper forum. And in addition to the points listed, you know, some other signs we look for are drowsiness, irritability, things that, you know, raise pause for, you know, whether this person should be here. So to me, if that is what, and I'll add, I'm also TIP certified, which is a certification that typically hospitality institutions provide. I graduated from the School of Hospitality to look for signs of intoxication and basically make an environment safe to be in and to have fun in. Given that they're so similar in terms of what one looks for to basically say whether one should continue to participate in the event that is continuing, it's a bit surprising when there's the question of liability, safety, and just the fact that, you know, school functions are separate from, you know, those of personal recreation, that this is something that there's still a lot of opposition towards. And then lastly, going back to my point and saying that, you know, it's really up to the discerning faculty that will be the ones administering the breathalyzer test. If there's any sort of concern that those that will be administering the test are not discerning or essentially are not trusted by, you know, the students, the faculty, parents, the community, I think that's more of a reflection on why don't we trust them to be the ones doing this. I mean, I obviously haven't attended high school in a while. I'm sure there's some new faces, and you know, if it's something that's out of my realm of knowledge, that's something different. But in essence, it's whether whatever your opinion is, the thing to look at is the merit of this proposal. And by merit, I mean the quality of whether something is good or a synonym is of value. And to me, I think the value is, you know, at a certain point when I was in high school, I started kind of like dreading going on Facebook because I would kind of find out about, you know, my peers dying. And I mean, you know, social media is a part of our daily lives, you know, most of us in the millennial bracket. So I just, and obviously that's the extreme end of the spectrum. But regardless, I mean, there's a lot of different things that can happen that can negatively affect you up to that point. And for those things to happen on school grounds or at a school event is, regardless of what the negative effects are outside of the school event, doubled, if not tripled. So that's pretty much all I have to say. I hope that you know, it made sense and was clear to you. And thank you for giving me and us the forum to do this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other VORA guests who would like to speak at this time? Now's the opportunity. It doesn't matter what the topic is. But
Yeah, you do.
No, you don't have to stand up.
You don't have to stand up. Take the mic.
If it'll help, we'll all stand up too.
Okay, so my name is Jalon Hall. I'm a junior at Nyack High School, and we're part of the Center Teen Council. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. And basically, we came here just to, I guess, not discuss, but just inform that, like, some of the students of Nyack High School don't feel that the, I guess, actions that are taking place, like, of the code of conduct, due to, like, a prior incident that happened last week at the high school, we feel the actions that are taken at the school aren't always equal, depending on the students. And I guess we just want to inform you guys and tell you how we feel about it, basically. That I feel that certain actions are, like, resulted in or put in differently, depending on the student, even if the actions are, like, similar to prior, like, situations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We the board would not be able to talk about specific, because I'm sure you have very specific students that you could probably provide for us. But what I would like the opportunity to do is to sit down with you and perhaps maybe even Hunter as a representative of the president of the student council, the student representative of the board, to maybe talk with me a little bit about some of the concerns in more specificity.
Mm-hmm.
So that we could get a better understanding, because we do want to listen, and I know the board certainly mm-hmm. wants to listen as well, and it would be very helpful. And I will share with you that we're all very proud of you. I know it's not easy to come to a meeting like this mm-hmm. and to speak like that, but it's an important issue for us, because we certainly do want to. And I'll just say as a preface, and I'll be more specific when we do get together to meet, do understand that I don't know, again, the specifics that you have in your minds or what you've seen, but when we do engage in the code of conduct policy, one of your code of conduct policy, which I'm sure you might have seen before, does have a range of different disciplines that can be meted out by, depending on the infraction, the level of the infraction, the grade level, and things of that sort. But also, a student's prior disciplinary infractions do weigh in terms of what will be meted out. It's very clear, just as one example, in our substance abuse policy, that if it's your first offense versus the second offense, yes, there are a difference. And I don't know that's the case in the situations that you have observed, and you may not be aware of the students and what their prior history has been in terms of the district. But I just want you to be aware that that does weigh into the decision making of the administration as well. But we can talk more specifically when we get together.
Okay. Thank you so much for your concern. Would you like, please state your name for the podcast?
My name is Nicole Hines. I'm the assistant director at Nyack Center. I'm also a parent of a child in Nyack High School. I just want to say that I applaud these kids here for actually coming out and being able to speak their voices to you guys, because it is kind of intimidating to talk to the adults and have something to say on their mind. Movie that you guys did at the center was great, great attendance, and kudos to Nicole for having our winner as a Women of Leadership and Vision. So thank you guys.
Right. Thank you for making that.
And thank you for being here to support them as
support
well.
Them. Really, indeed,
thank you. A lot of comfort.
Okay, so at this point in time, so we're going to be, just so you know, we're going to be going through a number of other items, so feel free to gently ease on out the door if you don't wish to stay for the rest of this.
We have to.
So maybe we can hold off on the budget and talk about the REM approval.
Oh, that was going to be really quick, actually.
You
like, I think.
If you want to just keep that going,
keep that going.
It's up to you guys.
It's up
actually,
to you.
I need a 2-minute break.
I know.
Can we pause for 2 minutes?
Sure.
I tell you what, take a pause. We'll get the show
set up.
Started for the budget. Mm-hmm. Yes, if we may.
Sorry, it took my pause. I guess
they time checked it.
No one's watching.
Okay, we're going to take a quick walk through the
through this year's budget. If you have any questions, feel free to pop them, ask them as we kind of go through this. As the board knows, we always look at goals each year when we develop the budget. Things such as protecting educational programs, trying to maintain our class size guidelines, deal with the tax levy, as you'll see was a real challenge for us this year, implementing cost savings and efficiency measures wherever we are able to do so, support educational initiatives, which you'll see highlighted in this budget for going into next year, and adhering to state and federal mandates. And I'll highlight one of the mandates that's really having a real impact on us, and that is in the area of Part 154, bilingual education. This past year, this current year's budget preparation really can be described as a perfect storm. We have an historically low tax cap. We have still, at the moment, flat foundation aid, and we're still under the gap elimination adjustment, which does withhold funding from us. You see this each year. We always try to balance our revenues with expenses and try to demonstrate this board has been able to do things such as the lease agreements with BOCES at our old high school, renting out a portion of this building through Nyack College, which generates a good amount of revenues. You heard Trustee Rock talk about Inspire Nyack, our Ocado funding that we receive, the Safe Schools grant. You'll also see some additional state funding that we're receiving through Senator Carlucci, or we anticipate in this year's budget as well. Just some quick facts about the budget. The overall budget that we're proposing this year would be $80,700,000. It would represent a budget-to-budget increase of 2.69%. And this is not a misprint. That 0.24% is, in fact, the increase in the tax levy. And that is significantly the lowest tax levy that we're ever proposing in this community. This slide, and this will be posted on the website, does walk you through the components of the tax levy cap. A lot of people in the state of New York believe that this is a 2% cap on your budget, and it is not. It is a 2% or the CPI, whichever is lower. This year's CPI happens to be 0.12%, and when you add that 0.12% into an eight-step formula, you come out with what the NIAC tax cap is on the levy this year, which is the 0.24%. That provides us with the ability to increase the tax levy by $161,680 without going to an override. To put it in perspective, last year, which was the lowest tax levy increase we've had probably for the past 5 years, which was 1.65%, that generated about $1.2 million. So you can see this year we're almost $1 million below what we were a year ago. And a year ago was one of the lowest, as I said, that we've had in some time. So this is very, very significant. This slide really just takes a look at where the money comes from in terms of the overall revenue. You can see that almost 84% of our budget comes from that tax levy, which is why when you have a very low increase, it's a significant issue for us. We also get another 12.4% in state aid. This budget that I'm presenting does make an assumption, which the governor's proposal does not provide, that we will be fully restored that almost $480,000 of gap elimination. The legislation has not finalized the budget. We're hearing a lot of optimism that we will get this money, and you'll see the contingencies in a moment that we have laid out. We receive about another $1.5 million in miscellaneous. That is primarily from your leases of the old high school and this building, along with tuition and interest on investments and things of that sort. You'll hear me also talk about the $140,000 legislative grant that's being executed by Senator Carlucci's office, the use of $664,000 from surplus funds, or basically general fund balance, and another $450,000 in surplus in your reserve for retirement. So you can see we're adding into this budget over $1 million in our surplus funds. When you look at us 5 years ago, you could see that compared to where we are going forward, you can see that we have significantly reduced our administrative expenditures from 11%, over 11%, to 9.6%. We've increased the investment into programs from the 79% to over 80%. And you also see, and you'll see it particularly in this particular budget, some gentle increase in capital improvements.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
James, you need the mic.
Is that a significant increase, that program budget? I mean, it's really only 1%, right?
Well, it's when you look at it that it's almost 1%. It's 1% on an $80 million budget, so it's like about $800,000. So it is fairly significant, particularly in a world in which the budget dollars are becoming more scarce. The fact that we're able to decrease your administrative expenditures to put more dollars directly into programs, again, I think that's in part reflective of the economy and trying to ensure that whatever reductions we make, that we've made in this district with our Board of Education, have not been in the classrooms, things that really directly affect our students. We've been able to find other ways to make our budgets whole. This is a familiar slide. This just shows the history of the gap elimination adjustment over time. And you can see that over the seven-year period, it's almost $8 million of aid that this district has not received from the state of New York to operate your schools. And we still have a hole until it's been remedied, hopefully in this next legislative session, of $480,000 from the gap elimination. Also true in foundation formula, here we've seen almost $23 million in aid that's been basically promised to this district under the foundation formula that the state has not met its obligations, which again is making it more difficult to operate our schools. What this budget does help as we go forward, we have a district that is very diverse in terms of our student population. This board has been very conscious to ensure that it meets the needs of all students. So this slide just highlights some of the different areas on the various spectrums, things such as our alternative high school program is in the budget. We talked about the drama club and our middle school girls club, the after school homework assistance that's provided in the district, the CDOS, which is for students with special needs that enables them to meet the state requirements for the certificate of employment, our athletic programs, our marching band, the STEM or STEAM and science initiatives that the board saw in one of its previous meetings this year, the summer kindergartners readiness intervention program we do plan to continue next year, our community outreach to both the NIAC Center and also the Waldron Terrace, our high school promise, which is a mentoring program at the high school, extended year program for students with special needs, our summer efficacy institute for fifth graders entering the sixth grade, and what is going to be new going forward is a Saturday program for bilingual students and parents to assist them with English language needs. Some of the initiatives in a budget going forward, let's take the elementary level first. You have seen a presentation previously on Project Lead the Way, so we're going to be launching Project Lead the Way, which is a STEAM engineering, pre-engineering program. Will actually begin in kindergarten through fifth grade next year with two units in our elementary schools at each grade level. We do have in the budget an additional kindergarten section. Obviously, we don't know exactly what we're going to experience, but we are projecting the need. Adding an additional bilingual class, you currently have a kindergarten and first grade bilingual. The first grader is going into second grade next year. We're budgeting for that need. And we are also budgeting to keep class sizes to the levels the board has provided for us as guidelines at Valley Cottage. At the middle school level, also you'll see the Project Lead the Way, which is automation, robotics, engineering, biomedical elements in part of the curriculum. There's money in the budget to ensure that our eighth grade teams going forward have the class size limits that we, that are set as guidelines. And up at the high school, again, as part of Project Lead the Way, we're adding courses in biomedical engineering and aerospace engineering to complement the introduction engineering that was introduced this past year. English as a new language, we're going to be able to provide students for credit to be able to basically have bilingual instruction in living environment and science. We're also adding a section for Spanish reading and writing. These are students that are coming to our high school that are not literate in the language, their native language of Spanish. We're also adding, which is to take advantage of that beautiful Mac Lab that Inspire has provided for us, which was part of our original planning, to add advanced piano next year and also advanced music technology. We're also looking to add a requirement of financial literacy for every NIAC high school student that goes through, so they understand some of the components of loans that students will be taking as they go into college and how that gets compounded and a variety of other things about financing and, you know, long-term investment and things of that sort. And also an advanced and a new AP advanced placement course in human geography. District-wide, our, you know, we have a very rigorous five-year curriculum renewal plan. This year, what we'll be looking to do is implement our social studies, which basically is at its phase three of the program development. So we do have budgets budgeted for new materials and programs and also staff development in the area of social studies. This next slide just basically shows, again, a little historical information about the tax levy, and you can see just how significant a decrease that 0.24 represents in terms of what some of the other years since the inception of the tax cap have been. You can see in some years the cap by the CPI formula has been allowing us to go over 2%. Here we can see that we're just about over 0%. At the same time, you can see what the percentage of the budget has been in your in the district for state aid, and it had been decreasing for a number of years, and we are projecting, but keep in mind that includes the anticipation of that $480,000 of gap elimination restoration. And finally, last one is just simply enrollment district-wide, and you can see it's been relatively stable over time. The this slide just reminds folks that this past year, those of you that have income levels of under $500,000 should have received a rebate check, basically to the amount of the increase in the tax levy last year as a result of the school budget. Because the district, the Board of Education was able to achieve bring a budget forward that was at the tax, or actually last year was below our tax, what the tax cap could have been. The property tax cap going forward, the property tax reform is going to be reduced next year under the governor's plan. It will go down to, for this area, basically $130 of a reimbursement. And at the same time, the eligibility to be able to be eligible for this, the threshold will now be $275,000 of family income. The property tax rebate going forward is going to be further changed over time. I'm not going to spend any time tonight going through with it. We'll have plenty of time next year to talk a little bit more about it. But there are some further changes of this tax rebate plan. The proposed budget does provide for capital improvements with no impact on the tax levy. As I mentioned, we're planning in this budget or proposing this budget to take $664,000 basically from your general fund balance. Those are basically reserve funds. And those monies would be dedicated to the following. At the middle school we would use $403,000 to replace the interior stair treads at the middle school, a new PA system, and make what is much needed baseball field improvements, primarily drainage, to deal with the erosion and enhancement of field playability. So this will not just be helpful for the students for phys ed class and modified baseball and other modified programs that use those fields, but also for the little leagues and the recreational programs that use these fields as well. $161,000 would be dedicated to the high school. This would be for the auditorium removal of the orchestra pit to replace that, interior door replacements for the gymnasium and as well as the auditorium, and also to install a new PA system and new lockers on the third floor, to which are much needed for a growing population at the high school. While the overall population is remaining flat, you're going to see increases in student enrollment at the high school. $100,000 would be district-wide, all our buildings, to install mandatory carbon monoxide detectors in all our schools. This is just a quick picture of the baseball field. Many of you
know what I'm talking about when you talk about erosion up there. And if you are going to see the play during intermission, take a peek at the orchestra pit. That's what we're looking to make some improvements to. We also have capital improvement contingent on the elimination of the GEA. We would use these funds, or $380,000 of these funds, to place $140,000 invested into the middle school to replace lockers on the second and third floors. I think we did a section down below on the first floor this past year. Also to paint the gymnasium walls and ceilings. We'd also invest $240,000 of those dollars at the high school to replace the lighting in the auditorium, which is the original lighting, inefficient lighting, the house lighting with LED lighting. Also paint the auditorium and the walls and ceilings of the gymnasium. You are all familiar that Senator Carlucci has pledged, we don't have this as money in the bank at this point, but we are planning to receive it. And that would be $140,000 through a special legislative grant. Again, that would be invested in capital improvements, and specifically $140,000 to replace the original gymnasium bleachers with new motorized, basically vinyl type of bleachers that would be colored to match our school colors, and also obviously would be electronic to help, particularly with the lunch program, to move things in and out for gym class. Would really be a great advantage for us. You're going to see that this ballot is actually going to have three separate questions, and so in addition to the general fund question, a second proposition on the ballot would be to seek voter authorization to expend $5 million from one of our capital reserve funds, and this money would be projected to address water infiltration problems that we have going on primarily at the old high school, under the five-year capital plan. I want to point out that this will have no impact on the tax levy, and that specifically it would be used to replace the 927-year section of the roof at the old high school, the perimeter, the gutters, windows, repoint the chimney, replace windows at the old high school in the 1950 section, replace the maintenance garage and roof windows, and correct other causes of the water infiltration with this enveloping system.
Quick question.
Sure.
On that one, just that one sentence is going to go on the ballot, so basically that's going to be it. That's all the voters are going to see is that one sentence, right?
No, they're going to actually see it's required, and Carlene, you can shake yes or no, but it's required to spell out for the to the public precisely what the projects were going to be. So they'll see a lengthy kind of a question. The third proposition question is to seek approval for us to expand the $5 million existing capital reserve up to $10 million. And again, which would also be outlined in the question, the specific needs or what this money would be used for. And again, as you can see, it would be to address the infrastructure needs identified in the 2016 five-year capital plan. And for the board's edification, I just want to point out that while we did have and did are very appreciative of the bond proposal, which is helping us to do a lot of things in the district, that really does not cover all of the needs that you have in your buildings going forward. So this really is a long-term plan. We don't have those kind of reserve funds. I think right now we have maybe $800,000 in that reserve. So you're a long way from $5 million. We don't anticipate getting there soon. But this is really an effort to prepare this district for its future so that you have a place to go to ensure that your buildings maintain themselves, and the investment both in terms of the educational environment as well as just the investment of the buildings themselves, and eliminate the need, which we've really struggled with over the years, with the strain from repairs of fire alarms and roof repairs and things of that sort. So it's really a kind of a long-term plan for the district. And this just reminds us of what happens if the budget does not pass. A second time it goes into a contingency budget. And finally, the important budget dates, and most importantly is the May 17th, which is the budget, the election of the budget, and also the three seats for the board positions. And thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to respond to them.
The line item is in board docs. That's
the line item is. Yeah, that's what I brought.
But if we could have, if we can have this,
that would be great. Right.
Yeah, we were still working on it because we decided that it was worth pushing forward that gap elimination into the budget, and that was really kind of a last minute decision. But we'll have that not only just for you, but we're going to post this also on our website as well for the community.
Questions for Dr. Masana.
I was just going to ask, can you explain, I think it was proposition number 2. Can you go back to that one for a minute?
That proposition is about expending, you have a capital reserve that has $5 million in it, well actually had $10 million. $5 million you've already exhausted because it's used for the bond projects. Mm-hmm. So it has $5
million. So there's $5 million left right now.
And in order for you to expend those capital reserve funds, you have to request voter approval mm-hmm. in order to expend it. You receive that voter approval for that first $5 million, and that was part of that bond vote. Actually, had two mm-hmm. questions to it. So this vote would, asking the voters to enable us to be able to take that reserve fund that are there, so it has no impact on the tax levy, that's 0.24%, but enable to use those funds to address the needs that we have, primarily in this case at the old high school.
And we've had that money's in the capital reserve fund because it's been there.
It's in
for
there.
Yeah. Years.
So it's not, we're not asking for more money, we're just saying we have money in our bank account. Will you let us use it to take care of these issues?
Got it.
Any other questions for Dr. Montesano? Trustee Mark?
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Montesano and Carlene. The capital, $664,000 expenditure, so that is not from a fund that needs voter approval to spend it?
That's your general fund balance. That's basically your surplus that you're allowed to have, like up to 4%.
Right.
So it's from that one, yeah. Okay, the general fund balance. And what are the mechanics of the GEA, the money we're hoping to get when the gap elimination gets eliminated? is it a line in the budget? What are the mechanics of having that and the Carlucci money in the budget, but we don't know we have the money yet?
It gives us the authorization to do these capital projects because you need the voter authorization to do them. So once the money comes, we have the authorization to move forward.
Okay. But if we don't get it, we don't have to spend money that we don't have?
Right.
Okay. And are our taxes going up 0.24% or 2.69%?
The tax levy is going up $161,000, which represents 0.24% of the current tax levy. So you will have a very, very gentle tax bump as a result of approving this budget. In addition, if you have an income under $275,000, you will receive the 130, which will probably cover that amount and more. I mean, it's,
Right. So the 2.69 number includes these things from the fund balance.
The budget-to-budget increase?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really reflective of, the use of the fund balance, the Carlucci fund. Yeah,
money that's coming from someplace other than the taxpayer's pocket.
It's not coming from the tax levy.
Right. Thank you.
Got it.
Trustee Motion.
First of all, thank you. Thank you again, Carlene. I know you work very hard along with your team, your staff, and appreciate it. This is the second year in a row we're going to the voters for an authorization. So do you feel, no one can project the future. No one knows what the CPI is going to be next year. Will we have to go through that authorization again? I mean, can you talk to speculate on that, or it's just not even worth it because you don't know what the CPI is?
Truthfully, I think you folks that live in your community be better judges of how the community will react to it. What we're basically recommending is that we believe these expenditures are not just warranted, are really necessary to to continue the operation of the schools. Particularly, I'll share with you that you have a very active and beneficial lease right now with BOCES, and they have presented to you, and the lease is about to terminate. They presented to us a list of wants that they need to ensure that that budget, that school is able to meet the needs that they have for their programs. These are some of the items that they've, believe that do need to be addressed. So it's protection of the investment and also to assist us with hopefully a continuing good relationship with both of you.
Yeah, I don't think you'll have any issue with the old high school because there's so much, enthusiasm for that. I just want to know if if we get that authorization approved for the new bleachers, can they put padding on those for those of us who are old and need a little padding, some padded bleachers maybe? When you're at the Jimerson Festival, it could get a little up there. And then the only other, one of the other things that I wanted to find out on that slide, the initiatives of 216, 217. I talked to several board members about the notion, and I don't know if you want to budget it in for 2016, 2017, this is the budget year that you would have to budget it, for that continuum approach to education. That was the NISBA document that I sent down in terms of just looking at funding for the trips for the high school and the middle school to look at local campuses to kind of, help them in their aspirations to go to college. So you might want to speak to that because we had a conversation.
Yes, I think the first process we should look at is what our students and parents and board would be supportive of. And I say that because the Oyster Bay and one of the Hempsteads, I think.
Yes, Oyster Bay was one, and then, the one in
West
Hempstead,
Long Island. Those were, if I recall correctly, were set for 8th graders and, I think, 10th graders.
Yes.
And the 10th grade one was an extensive visit. That was a 5-day, taking kids out 5 days during their school break, I believe. Hmm. And they went, as far south as North Carolina, because I know one of the video showed them down at UNC. Mm-hmm. How that would be received by your students, and would we get kids to be interested in attending for that length of time? Another approach is to maybe do some survey of our kids, our current ninth graders going into 10th, parents, and maybe a 1-day overnight or even just a series of 1-day trips where we can take them out to some kind of venue schools, and 8th graders as well. I would suggest maybe just being a day trip where they can maybe see 2 or 3 campuses, which would be maybe a school field trip. But I think what I would want to know is what we think the community would, at least as a starter, maybe it would grow over time when people saw a value in it. But I think we have to see what framework, and if it's something that we want to do during the school day, want to try on a long weekend of one of the spring breaks or winter breaks, then we can get a sense of what the budgetary needs would be. Because obviously, a day trip is going to be a whole lot less costly than taking 5 kids and putting them overnight for 5 nights, at a campus someplace. So that's what goes to my mind.
I agree.
So what I'm going to suggest is we do some legwork with Dave and Nicole and the guidance, and maybe even do a little quick survey with our parents or something to get a little sense, just to get a response.
Yeah.
So people may have an understanding we're looking at, and if it's favorable, we can, and we can always just plug a number in terms of what we think the costs are and kind of work off of that. But that's,
Thank you.
My gut reaction.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the budget?
I was just going to kind of tag on to what James was saying. It just got me thinking about the field trips in general. I can't even remember the name of the video that I sent to everybody. It was, you know, it had a similar theory to Most Likely to Succeed, you know, in terms of just looking at the way we're educating our students. But it specifically talked a lot about field trips, but they had a different name for them. Opportunities for, I'm sorry, I can't remember what it is now. They were, it talked a lot about a middle school that was very successful and had, you know, it came from a very, it was a school, a middle school that had come from a very diverse background.
It
and,
was a, just to help
yeah.
you out a little bit.
Yeah,
it's,
thank you.
It's in the curriculum process, it's kind of like experiential learning. So
yeah.
we do a lot of this with our bilingual students, you know, E&L mm-hmm. students, along with preschool, kindergarten students. You take them to the pumpkin farm. Then they come back and they write about pumpkins or they read about pumpkins. So you give
yeah.
them some background in something and then bring it into the classroom for learning. That population that you were looking at
mm-hmm.
was a little different than your population here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, you know, concern is we lose an awful lot of day of instruction with so many different events that we run, and you have, you know, some very critical requirements out of the Common Core that we have to meet. So I don't know what you're envisioning. I mean, if we want to try a couple of different trips to, you know, for cultural development or something, but to take a model like that would
mm-hmm.
really, that's a very different learning approach. And it, why, in my mind,
mm-hmm.
in that particular setting where you have a economically disadvantaged, you know, community, taking them out to see the world and understand it better does certainly assist in terms of classroom learning. I don't see that necessarily fitting into your community. You know, you have a pretty
mm-hmm.
Sophisticated community overall. I do think we have some pockets of kids that can benefit from that. In fact, the SOAR program that's starting up at the middle school, that's one of the components that they want to do is take the kids to cultural events with their mentors and things. So it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
It would really have to be explored. I don't
yeah.
know if it's something we can just jump into the budget. You know.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to mention what we were talking about. And I guess I like the idea. I mean, it's great to hear about, you know, the group that's taking disadvantaged kids to cultural events, but I love the idea of us sort of exploring as many activities as possible that our whole, that our kids could do together as a whole to just continue to sort of bring the community together in different ways. You know, we have a very diverse community, and I guess sometimes that diversity creates some divides. You know, we've certain just community divides in terms of where we live and what people do. So just, I always think the school is a good place to bring kids together and doing memorable events together as a whole. So I know it shows something that particular video. Maybe just sort of what you were saying is jumping into it in a little bit. And I don't know if it's something that necessarily needs to be budgeted for or not, but some experiential trips.
Well,
particularly in the middle school.
Well,
and
Project C is
yep.
that
mode,
and maybe
that's
exactly
about trying to expand that, you know, at once a grade level or something.
Yeah, exactly. The Project C is a great example of that type of thing. So I don't know. I don't know where that fits into the budgeting process or not. But since we were talking about the trips and visiting colleges, I kind of seem to go maybe hand in hand with that a bit.
Mm. Okay. Any further commentary? Okay, moving on. Wow, we still have a workshop.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do the resolution.
The easier one.
Avoid the elephant in the room. Yes.
Yeah.
3.5, the resolution. Yes, can you
it's
tell
on
us
there.
Where we are?
Yes, so the resolution that we had taken a peek at a previous board meeting, I did speak to Rockland County School Board Association and ask if it had ever been fact-checked. The association hadn't fact-checked it, and then when I was at the meeting last night, I brought it up, and it turns out that the feedback in that room was that nobody seemed to be using that resolution, and that what I heard people saying is at least one district, I don't remember which district it was looking more at a very simple resolution that just said something along the lines of, we support a monitor with a veto power. So I didn't write anything up or get any examples
no, that's
of anything,
okay.
but it did seem like
are.
Maybe that proposal that we had looked at or that resolution wasn't generally being used by
majority. Did they say why they weren't? Was any reasons given?
There was not a big discussion about it. Okay. You know, I try to gather a little bit of information. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess my sense is maybe sort of as we started looking at it and thinking, was that, maybe there was a little bit too much in there that didn't get right down to the actual point mm-hmm. that was a monitor with veto powers.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Anyone care to comment on this before we move forward? Or have we moved forward?
So do we, what do we do in terms of this? If not very many people are using it, do we just go to something basic
craft something else
since nobody's really using it? Or what do people think about what's on the table?
I can ask. You can contact the Rockland County School Board Association and find out if there's other proposals that they're supporting or what they're trying to suggest. Because if they didn't sign on to that, I'm sure the discussion is not over. Mm-hmm. I mean, that has been a topic of discussion in that organization for the whole year.
It's funny. It sort of seems like there wasn't much more discussion about it. It's always good to ask and
see.
What
were you talking about last night?
Well, at the executive meeting afterwards.
Yeah. I'm sure they had other things going on. But yeah, I will. I'll ask. I'll find out what if anybody's adopted anything and what it is.
I think it was Sarah Chauncey that had mentioned a very basic resolution, and I'm trying to remember which district Sarah's with.
Because I know at one point the Rockland County School Board Association asked if we would generally support the notion of having a monitor with veto power and to propose that. And I think I sent an email to everybody at one point and said, is everybody in favor of that? But that was just very vanilla.
Well, what had come up, I think maybe we talked about it a little bit the last meeting when you weren't here, maybe, was that when the resolution was passed around at the previous Rockland County School Board Association that I had attended, the group as a whole had sort of said, this isn't really something that we can discuss as a group and pass as a group, that we're really just sort of giving you this because it was a resident of East Ramapo who had been part of an advocacy group had asked that they distribute it. And then at that meeting, there was actually a little bit of controversy because the school board member representing East Ramapo was not in support of it at all. So, you know, and then that gentleman was not at the meeting last night, but it sort of seemed intentionally not to be discussed. But I could always even, if you ask, I could also try to ask Sarah in particular, remembering that she's the one who mentioned a very basic thing. And you know what I realized I forgot to mention, ties in with this a little bit, that Pam Frederick is, she mentioned last night that she is resigning, that she's moving on, not until, I want to say maybe the end of the summer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody's really liked her a lot, I think, as a executive director. And she just, you know, due to personal things in her lives and other opportunities and is helping the transition and everything. I should have mentioned that earlier, but I forgot.
Okay, no worries.
Just for the record, that is a position that you can apply for. So anybody, it's not, you don't have to be involved in the Rockland County School Board Association already. It is a, I think it's a part-time employment position.
But you can't be a school board member.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But yeah.
You cannot.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to, Trustee Jukta.
Thanks, President Hughes. I just wanted to say something about this state monitor in East Ramapo. Personally, I am disgusted by what's gone on in East Ramapo. And personally, I don't understand why it's been so many years that it's been allowed to continue, personally. I think we have to be really careful as a as an equal board of education in the county about passing resolutions decrying other boards in our county or saying things about other boards and ceding control or recommending that we have a state body appoint a monitor with veto power that removes control from another school board, to me is a very dangerous precedent. And I think that we should think long and hard about, as a board, endorsing any of those proposals where we give state legislature the ability or the approval as a school board for a monitor in another district in our county that has veto power. That said, personally, I think if it's the only way to get done what needs to get done in East Ramapo, I hope it gets done. and it should have gotten done a long time ago. I just feel, and if a majority of our board feels differently, that's fine. We're not voting on anything. Yeah. But I just wanted to put that out there, that we should be very careful about how we tread in that arena,
yeah.
My opinion.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Trustee Marshall, were you about to say something?
No.
I saw the pen go up.
No.
Okay. So, Leon, I guess where we left off with this,
yeah,
we come back with something
and
discuss.
Now that you say that, that could very well have something to do with why they adopted a more vanilla issue. I mean, I think, you know, the whole business with East Round Paddle, in my opinion, has an impact on all of us, because I remember not too long ago there was a huge deficit in the BOCES budget because of the amount that was owed by East Ramapo. And in fact, they were at one point looking at other districts to make up that shortfall if they hadn't come through. So it does have impacts beyond the borders of East Ramapo. But thank you for pointing out that issue, because it certainly is, you don't want to be in a situation with that creating precedent for...
Yeah, and I wasn't saying, to rebut for a second, I wasn't saying that the issues don't need to be resolved there.
No, we've
or
got
that the
that.
Problems that they yes. could cause to other districts,
yep.
you know, which may even seem, to me, almost circumstantial relative to the pain and suffering that the students
yep.
and the people, the population of East Round Paddle have been going on, you know, have been enduring. I just don't know that a monitor with veto power is the way that the New York State should solve that problem. And I'd love them to be a little bit more creative, and certainly they're overdue in fixing this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have an answer to what that solution is, but I don't know that having a monitor there with veto power overall is the answer.
Okay. Trustee Mitchell.
I just want to mention that both of you were absent at the last meeting when we had a member of the community who was also a former superintendent of the Nye Public Schools. Correct, was she not?
She was.
She was assistant.
Assistant superintendent. You have the history. This was Constance Frazier. I would encourage you and
yeah,
you to listen to that podcast because it represents some of what Trustee Irvin just said. The problem, if they were going to correct it on their own, they would have corrected it. So I like your point that I hope it can be solved on their own. The mere fact that it hasn't has brought this down from not just outside of their community, because they're not policing what should be happening within their community, and it's pretty black and white what's being done. So you look at, you know, the population that's being disenfranchised, and you look at the population that's getting the vast majority of dollars in the East Ramapo School District, and that's pretty black and white. So it has gone well beyond their borders, first in terms of the BOCES issue that Leanne just pointed out, and in terms of, and Karen, you pointed it out too in the last board meeting, in terms of the number of calls that you get from students looking to escape that situation.
Yeah.
So, you know, listen to her podcast. It was the most eloquent thing that I've heard about that, and she is very much involved at the state level, and, you know, being from NIAC, she has seen it, and she provided us an excellent historical perspective on the problem.
Yeah.
James, I agree 100% with what you said. I wasn't saying that the current board of East Ramapo should be able to fix their problem, because they clearly haven't.
I heard what you said. Yeah.
At a higher level,
well,
like what the legislature would do with appointing a monitor with veto power. Figure out how to fix the problem, because clearly the local school board can't fix the problem.
Well,
it's unacceptable.
Part of her advocacy is that they're going around and talking to all school districts about this, to encourage all school districts outside of East Ramapo to get involved and to, you know, go for this monitor with veto power. And it's almost untested. It's until you have that person in place, until they have veto power, you're not going to see what's going to change in that situation. But they're not stopping at, you know, at Rockland County. They're going across counties to see how, and they said our school district has been one of the most receptive school districts in looking at, you know, and signing on to this. And they talked to our, you know, a number of administrators, and we've been very perceptive according to her. So.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we, if you could find out what we could get in terms of a toned down resolution.
Mm-hmm.
We could also, if there is one,
yeah.
Let's find out if we can. And I've got Connie's number. Maybe I may just ask her and find out how many other districts in the area have supported it? Because I'm with you a bit, Dan. You know, you don't want to be the one out there hammering on them, but if there's a general trend towards doing it. Not that I want to be a follower, but I'd hate not to be doing it if it can lend support. Because I think what they're saying is, I don't disagree with having a fiscal monitor there. I honestly don't, because I think they can't monitor themselves, right? So if what we can do can help to straighten it out, or at least send a message to Albany that says, do something, right? Maybe that's what the resolution is, right? So let's see. But let's see what's out there. Let's see how many people who's saying what, and then we can go from there.
And I wasn't opposed to resolution. I just wanted to break
point. Right.
Break, okay. All right. Point taken. Good.
Yeah.
All right. So resolution, that's that. Workshop item 3.4, six reading of the breathalyzer testing. So, Ralph.
What are we doing now?
We had, last time we had tabled it, but we had asked, if I'm not mistaken, there was, I can't remember if you had imparted this to everyone, there was a question on the floor about the legality of penal, what you had asked the question, you had asked thank you, articulate it for me.
At one of the meetings, somebody, I think was in law enforcement, stood up and made a comment about penal law versus education law and certain evidentiary rules and due process rules.
Okay.
And I just thought it was worth it to probably have you discuss with us that distinction, how a district is allowed to take certain actions that may, in a penal and criminal setting, violate due process or potentially, lead to evidence that would not necessarily, or action that would not necessarily be admitted or supported in the criminal context.
Okay.
Because I just thought I wasn't 100% sure on that myself.
So students don't lose their constitutional rights at the schoolhouse gate. There's cases that talk about that and use that kind of language. However, there's a lesser standard in the school context as opposed to the criminal context. So when you hear things in terms of searches and seizures with respect to citizens, you're hearing terms like probable cause as being the trigger for an allowable search or seizure. When you have students in the school context, it's a lesser standard. It's something called reasonable suspicion. And so your policy is written with reasonable suspicion in mind to address and dovetail in with that standard in the school context. And so you're not subject to the probable cause standard, you're subject to the reasonable suspicion.
So then, therefore, if somebody at, say, the breathalyzer is administered to a student, we're okay if we're using it based on reasonable suspicion alone.
Correct.
We would not be subject to legal challenge that we did not use probable cause.
Correct.
Okay. Anybody else?
No.
And I would just add that, as I recall, there's sentence in a sentence or sentences in the policy that address the role of law enforcement in terms of indicating that law enforcement is not going to be involved in the breathalyzer, and the purpose of that is to avoid any kind of potential problem about what standards should be used, because it's the school officials who are going to be making the determination, not the local police department, as to when you should or shouldn't administer a breathalyzer. The school officials are going to look at the student, look at the presentation of the student, make determinations based on the factors in the policy. Is this a student that I have reasonable suspicion as having been under the influence of alcohol? And should I administer, in this case, the breathalyzer?
Okay. Thank you, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph.
You're
any
welcome.
Comments? Michael, Mark?
You go.
Trustee Mark? Oh,
I defer to Trustee Jones. And I don't know if this was not discussed at the last board meeting.
No, we tabled it. As you guys were here.
Another community member had brought up the term breathalyzer. He was a law enforcement officer, as it relates to that the breathalyzer is a unit that's in a station house,
right.
In a police station.
He went in great detail about that.
And that we should get the language right
of what we're talking about, what equipment we're talking about. So I didn't know if that was addressed or I could look into that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It doesn't.
He indicated something called a
field test.
Yeah. I mean, is that if the word breathalyzer is the word that's used, does that exclude us from using whatever we're supposed to use if this is a policy?
According to him, that was a specific test that wouldn't be used in the field.
Okay.
If
I can look into that particular issue, what I would say to you is if breathalyzer is a particular product, you know, like if the name is like iPod is, you know, specific to Apple, and you know, there's other devices.
iPad.
He doesn't use an Apple phone, and he doesn't use Facebook.
Right. So, you know, we could indicate an MP3 device or whatever.
There you go. An MP3 device. There you go.
We could use something like that to make it clear in terms of the device. But I could look into it. When I had surveyed other policies in the area, they were using the term breathalyzer. So I actually didn't connect the two, that it might be unique in terms of the particular product versus just describing the device. But I can look into that, and that would just be a simple find and replace in your policy.
Right.
Okay. I was going to say, if it's our policy, you can also add a definition section and define it to whatever you want it to be, because that's the policy.
Right.
So it's as defined.
That's defined.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Any other comments? Trustee Mark, do you want to defer to anybody, or do you want to talk this time?
I just had some thoughts that I shared at a minimal level, just to try to clarify them. My and appreciate the comments that were made tonight in support of the policy, because that added some balance to the consideration. My concern with the policy as it stands right now are several fold. And they come from some of the strident concerns that were raised a couple of meetings ago. And I do understand that you're not building policy to appease the people that are sitting in the chairs in front of you, but you do have to be appropriately strategic to make a policy that the community will buy into enough that you can enforce it. The things that I heard tonight in comments recognized those indicators that staff would use to use the breathalyzer as the recognized appropriate indicators to use the machine. And a specific point that was made at this meeting, when there were people who had concerns before, were that these indicators also were acceptable to them. The only thing that they were concerned about was the actual use of the device, that it was intrusive. They were concerned about some of the legal things that Ralph has told us are not things that we need to be technically legally concerned about, but they had to do with things about being intrusive and privacy and things like that. That being said, the thing that occurs to me is, number one, the way the policy is written now, if we use the breathalyzer, employ it to show that the student has an objective indicating number, the consequences are the same as if we don't use the breathalyzer. If the student refuses to use the breathalyzer the way the policy is written, then we revert to the perceived indicators. If the student uses the breathalyzers, it doesn't seem that there's an additional consequence. So I don't know that the use of the breathalyzer adds anything other than that objective tool, which our principal, Nicole Saiva, said would be a help for them in trying to educate kids about the problem. That being said, it occurred to me, and I don't know if this is a practical thing to do, but wanted to bring it up for consideration, is to take away the concerns that parents had who said everything is fine about this thing and everything is fine about how we enforce the policy except the breathalyzer, is to make the use of the breathalyzer in the policy optional. Now, that may not be a practical thing to do, but my consideration on it came from the fact that the first thing that the policy says that we do when a staff member perceives that there's a problem with a student is that they contact the parents, because they want to say, we're taking the kid's keys away. If the kid is driving, they can't go home, they need you to come and get them. Absent of the parents' presence, we turn them over to an authority, perhaps the police, who can drive them home or wait for the parents to come. But if you contact the parents, you could insert the option for the parent where you say, we have a trained person who's on staff and we have a calibrated machine. Do you want us to give this test to the student, to your child, so that we have a teaching tool and an objective number, or not? And what that does is it takes the onus away from the school district. It makes us not adversaries to the parents who don't want this. It makes us make the thing available to parents who do want it. And it also adds the component that the district brought up, that sometimes you have groups of students and it's difficult to determine necessarily who maybe is under the influence and who is not. There are kids that are insisting that they're not. Now you have a machine that could identify that, and the kid can voluntarily say, let me blow into the thing and I'll show you that I'm definitely not drinking. I do understand that if you're going to do something like this, then it just means everybody's going to refuse it, but they might refuse it anyway given the way the policy is written, because a student that reads this, it says, I can refuse the thing and I'll still be held to the same consequence that I would be if I did blow into it. Mm-hmm. I just think that the possibility of exploring the idea of giving it some kind of an option so that you put it in the hands of the parents takes away some of the adversarial thing.
At the risk of being out of place here, I just want to try to get you to get try to move the board to some closure on this whole issue. The concept of adding another layer to this policy and asking parents, you know, I'm just trying to go through a scenario in my mind what it would look like. So I call you up and say, you know, we think Johnny is under the influence. We have somebody trained on staff. We'd like to issue the breathalyzer. You say no. My response to you is, come and get your kid because we think they're under the influence.
But that's mm-hmm. what you'd say either way.
Well, I'll share with you, and I know I speak for administration, we would prefer that you take the breathalyzer yeah. completely out of the picture, because based on what you just said earlier, was that, you know, if you're using your gauge in how you're deciding whether to approve this policy or not, is based on the comments you had from your parents, which, you know, that were here that night, who agreed up until the point of the breathalyzer device, and they said, everything is fine up until that point. What's your policy you have now?
Yeah.
So if you feel that that is acceptable to your parents, what that says to me is your parents have complete faith in the judgment mm-hmm. that your administrators are making currently.
Mm-hmm.
Which I will remind you, in the past 4.5 years, we've had a total of 16 students that have been identified as under the influence. And I don't think this is in my opinion, is a pervasive enough issue for the board to be spending the amount of time you're spending. And I would advise you either to say, we think the breathalyzer policy in our schools makes a statement that this Board of Education feels that we don't prescribe to or endorse underage drinking in our schools, and we want to use this policy as a deterrent for kids to know that this, you know, because I think that was the basis of the
yeah.
beginning of this. And if at the same time you think that the policy as it's currently written is acceptable, your administration, by the way, really feels very confident of their ability to identify students that are under influence. When we've had of those 16 students, because I've been here for all 16 of them, we've had very few. I can think of just that one incident. We have about 6 or 7 of the kids that one night prior to the homecoming, where we had a couple of kids that took a position that they said they were not under the influence. We thought they were, part of which was by simply association. They were all coming out of the same home. We thought we smelled alcohol, not me personally, but the administration. My point being is either you have a policy that says, this is the policy, that's what it is, let's move forward, or keep the policy as it is, that, you know, the reasonable suspicion, if you think that's acceptable to your community, you have an administration that believes that they're capable of identifying students. But to start adding all these different layers that, you know, this happens and that happens, I can refuse. As it stands right now, just adding the piece about, you know, you have the option to take it or not for the student, I would envision the majority of students that are in the influence, that in itself is your breathalyzer, because I'm not taking it. The only reason I'm not taking it is
I'm positive.
I'm drinking. I can't speak for parents, and I'm not going to pretend to, but it's not a very intrusive, you know, we can come up with a wand that's the issue that they feel going into the class is the intrusive part. My feeling is the only student you're ever going to have, which I think even of the 16, which is a very small subset over the 4 years, that you're are those kids that really legitimately haven't been drinking and want to use this device to clear their name.
Yeah. Right.
And I would argue that it's a very, very minute number of your students. So my advice to you tonight is either make a decision, either say, you know, we think the policy and our administration will invest in their investment. To me, one of the best takeaways I've had from this is the student sitting across from me who had a comment about curriculum and the need for us to be more rigorous with regard to bringing awareness to students, educating students about the dangers, rather than using a breathalyzer to act as a deterrent. But I would just encourage you to, you really have been, and I really do commend you, all of you, because you've been very patient, allowing your full community, you've been very careful to ensure that your community is well informed of your deliberations that you've had. But I think you've heard from a good portion of your community, from various sides of it. You've heard from legal counsel on this. So let's get it going. Let's decide where you want to go.
We want a 7th reading.
I wanted to go double digits.
Double digits. The 21st reading.
Just in response, I just want to stress that I didn't bring these thoughts up because of the people that were in the chairs, but they raised questions that made me think about it in a different way. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
They were just part of the mix.
Okay, sorry, Marshall. Is this I'd like to speak?
Yeah, sorry.
Trustee Marshall.
And thank you for just kind of pushing us along to this, because we don't want a 21st reading, the 82nd reading of the breathalyzer policy. But there is the issue of, and I like, you know, what Hunter brought to the table. I really resonate with what he brought and the parent council brought to the table. I agree, you do need curriculum around it. You do need awareness. We had a number of parents speak passionately about, you know, okay, so what are you going to do? But I also feel this came about so organically because when it was initially brought up, before we even talked to council, it was brought up with the idea not just of the consequence piece, because that remains the same, it was brought up with the deterrent piece. If I'm going and there's any, you know, hint that the wand could like deem me, you know, under the influence, even though all the signs are there, maybe I'll think twice. So I think we need to, and I can't say this on podcast, but or get off the stool, because you know, I think we've been at this way too long. And I want to appreciate Ralph, because you kind of outlined it, not just in terms of, you know, except for this, you know, word breathalyzer, but other school districts outside of Rockland are doing this. And I would love to have some of those administrators come, but we don't have time for that because we're not going to do that. So how is it working in your school?
10 readings.
Is it a deterrent? How is it working?
Trustee,
I would just quickly point out that I did go to an Okada meeting here, and in attendance was Officer Kevin Shannon, who was a DARE officer here.
Officer Kev, yes.
And he's a Clarkstown police officer, and he spoke, and I mean, if you're going to have people come in and speak, he spoke about, he didn't go into great detail, but at Clarkstown High School events, when police are there, they have breathalyzers that they use in different ways. Yeah. And they don't use it, and they make it clear they're not there to arrest anybody. They're using it for a teaching tool, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If we're going to start listening to people, I'd want to have him in the mix, too, because he spoke well.
And keep in mind, at the last meeting, not the meeting before last, this made, you know, the news. So you've had Checky Beckford here on Channel, you know, 12. You had all these other people here. So it really, because this has been going on, that was the fifth reading, and I'm looking at this audience saying, where were you when we did the second, third, fourth readings? And now because the news media has jumped on it, now we're getting, all the feedback. And I understand we have board members that don't support it. That's everybody.
And Officer Kevin had the opposite reaction. He was, what were the cameras doing at a Nyack school board meeting? We've been having breathalyzers at high school dances at Clarkstown for years.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Interesting.
So in the interest of moving on. I'm not going to ask for a vote on this. Let me just ask some progressive questions. Mm-hmm. The way the policy is now crafted, we're not going to go for any other changes. Is everybody okay with the way it's crafted, at least? Does anybody feel very strongly that as it's written now, and I'll ask whether they support it or not, there should be wording changes to it? Because if there's none, then he's got nothing to do, and we move on, right? So that's the first thing there. Mm-hmm. As worded, is anybody uncomfortable with how it's worded?
I think you should give Ralph the opportunity to find out whether changing the word breathalyzer means something or not.
Yeah,
does it matter?
I just checked it. For what it's good.
Good thing.
Yeah. Oh, he's on his phone. Good, Ralph. Yeah. Yeah. Way to go, Ralph.
I
put
that up on your own.
There you go.
For what it's worth, Wikipedia indicates that the big distinction is whether you use a capital B or a lowercase b in the term breathalyzer.
Uh-huh.
Breathalyzer with the capital B is the trademark, it's the product
name. Okay.
Breathalyzer with the lowercase b, which is what way it's put in your policy, refers to a device for estimating blood alcohol content from a breath sample.
Okay.
I'll just verify. I'll verify that. Rather than just relying on Wikipedia. But
don't we tell students here not to use Wikipedia?
Right.
For what it's worth, that's
what I found quickly.
So to answer your question, Karen, I prefer that, given the way the policy is written now, I would prefer that it had everything in it except the breathalyzer. In terms of the wording, you were asking about the wording.
We want it to have everything.
Everything in here, all the indicators, all the consequences, everything we're going to do, except without the breathalyzer. Because I don't think the breathalyzer adds anything. I think the way that it's worded.
So you mean
go back to the original policy.
Go back to the original policy.
Use our current practice.
Okay. But the question was, do you have problems?
Do you have any,
Not whether you're approving or not, but do you have problems with the language of the breathalyzer policy?
I guess I'd have to go back and read what we have as our current practice. Is everything in our current practice written into this policy except for the breathalyzer?
Well, if you take the word, it's the title of the policy is use of breathalyzer. So
you have no policy
without that word in it.
Yeah, basically.
Gotcha. Breathalyzer testing.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
Well, then I'll just be quiet and remain confused in my chair over here.
So
we do
that failed.
Do we have to put this on as an action item though, considering
we do have to put it on to an action item, right? And I don't suggest we do that tonight. Would you agree?
I think you should give notice if we're gonna put it on as an action item.
So is everybody okay that we'll put it
for
But
what
you shouldn't get
question answered. Well, maybe that's probably not the best thing to do. If the board is, I don't know where the board is, but if the board is not of mind to move the policy forward, then I wouldn't suggest put it on as an action, but I guess you really don't know because you're not really asking that question.
Your question was, is anybody comfortable with the language? So
I started with the language and we went all over the place. I'm fearful of putting another question out there because I'm not progressing. All right, So
the policy doesn't have to... Can I ask a clarifying question? The policy as written right now does not have, the student has the option to refuse.
It does.
Correct.
Yes.
It just doesn't have any other layers. It's just
they have the option to refuse.
They say yay or nay.
And they'll get the same, they'll just be considered.
Got it.
And there is nothing that says the administrator has to use the breathalyzer, right? They can rely on, they do not have to use the breathalyzer, the administrator.
We address that.
Yeah.
They're going to use it where it's available.
Right. Reasonable suspicion.
If I remember that one of the last changes that we made, if it's available, if it's readily available, or if it's available, it's going to be used.
Right.
Okay.
And the rationale for me for that is you don't want to get into a situation, if you have these devices available, that a student accuses an administrator of purposefully not using it. You know, if it's available, use it.
Use it.
Okay. So.
And this is just if I'm okay with the language, not if I'm okay with the vote.
That's right.
I'm okay with the language.
We're okay with the language, because I'm just trying to understand, are we asking Ralph, step at a time, to make any changes?
I am okay with the language.
Leanne, are you okay with the language? That's right.
Based on your Wikipedia representation, yes.
Okay, all right. So if we wrote it with a small b.
I'm okay with it.
It is.
It has a small b.
Yeah. It has a small b.
Just for reference, I Googled breathalyzer high school policy just now. There are three or four school districts that have this existing policy.
Yeah.
They just came up on the top, and they all have a small b.
And they all have a small b.
And they all use the word breathalyzer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I should have done before. Super good.
Okay, so
keep asking. Everybody else? Keep going. Are you okay with the language of the policy?
Small b, you would like some other wording in there.
I prefer the wording.
You prefer the wording.
Small b,
small
I'm
b.
okay.
You and you're okay?
I'm fine with the way
small
it is.
Small b, you're okay. Okay.
Well, I mean, I know we're not voting on it. I know we're not voting on it. I understand Jim's point, but I liked Michael's creative suggestion of trying to come up with something that still respected the intent and what I think is the intent of most parents, that I think pretty much everyone who's coming does not think our kids should be drinking and as opposed to drinking. I think we all have different ways of figuring out how to achieve that. So I liked Michael coming up with a creative solution to a policy that's had a few little changes but nothing major, although I also understand Jim's point of make a decision at this point. So I guess the answer to the question is I don't have any problems particularly with the wording.
But if you decide you're going to call the parent and you don't get the parents, what happens next?
Exactly what happens now. Exactly what happens now. And I have faith, I feel like, just like Jim just said, we have had very few incidents of drinking.
One at a time, one at a time.
One last time. Please don't give us an overly cumbersome policy.
I don't think
No, that's why I'm trying to drill down, is that if we put this other wording in, then what?
But I just want you to be aware that these issues, every one of the issues we have not occurred during school day time. They occur in school events, football games, dances, which are typically held on weekends. Mm-hmm. The parents are not always accessible.
Exactly.
They don't always
That's where I was going with it.
And I just think you're adding a layer that would just logistically create more issues over something that really doesn't appear to me to be really an issue.
That's where I was going with that.
Okay. So, right. So, I just wanted to make sure that I had my opportunity to say that I think we've got a great plan in place. We've had very few kids drinking. I have full faith in our administration that they've done a great job of taking these guidelines and being able to determine the kids that have been drinking. So,
shall we table this indefinitely?
Yes, forever.
Tabling it.
Should we table it?
Forever.
Should we?
No. What does that get us? I think we.
Nothing.
It gets if a time comes when drinking becomes a larger issue in our district and we want to reconsider something that we spent a lot of time talking about, to me that's what tabling it does. If we hit a point when we say, oh my goodness, next year five kids showed up at football games drinking, something's going on here and we've got to relook at it. That's what, for me, tabling it does. It gives it the opportunity to bring it up again if we feel there's a reason to bring it up again.
I don't agree with that at all. I think you either move forward with it or just not do it.
Did you go through with everyone about the wording? That was
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not requesting any amendments. Nobody.
No more further changes.
No further changes required. We've come to that agreement.
Okay.
And we've also decided we do not want to make a decision tonight, right? We do not want to vote on this tonight. right?
I don't think you can. I think you have to give notice.
That's a good point.
Okay.
You can't. It's just you want to do that because
we would rather
right,
no, yeah, because
rather.
It's the right thing to do.
Right.
That's
can
correct.
We make something a
we
can workshop?
Do it, yeah.
Yes,
no,
we can.
I don't
can.
Think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Would everybody agree?
Okay.
I would agree. The policy that's had this much discussion, you want to make sure everybody knows we're going to vote on it. And mm-hmm. we could vote. We can certainly within our
saying.
Right to vote on it tonight.
Right. You can move
I see what you're
workshop.
Saying. Yeah, because we've done that in the past.
I would not recommend that for this.
All right.
And right now we have a procedure in place in case something happens.
In the meantime. So
yeah.
In the meantime,
yeah.
All right, we have indicators
all right.
and the faculty that can act on things.
So we're not tabling it. We are
so putting
ending,
notice.
We're ending whoa, whoa, the discussion whoa. On this. And we...
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Sorry.
Trust
you said me. We're not tabling it, but I only heard one person for tabling and one person against. Are you getting a straw poll on tabling?
Oh, that's right.
Go ahead.
Or, would you like to
I
table
would like
it?
To table it.
I think you should... put it on a future agenda as an action item.
I'd be in favor of tabling it.
What she said.
don't we have, I thought in order to table an item, there has to be a first and a second, and then it's a vote. And then
no.
there's a majority vote.
There's a first and a second and no vote.
No, there is a vote. You have to have
oh.
a majority vote to a table.
Oh,
we've done that in the past.
Oh, there's no discussion.
Oh,
there's no discussion,
we're
but you have to have a majority to table.
The answer is a motion to table requires a first and a second, but there's no discussion on a motion
right.
to table. It's just brought to a vote.
Right.
Is what parliamentary procedure
right.
Provides.
Awesome.
What you folks are doing is not actually making a motion to table. You're actually checking whether there's a consensus of the board to either bring this forward to a vote or
thank
not
you.
At the next meeting.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
how I see
thank
it.
You.
Start again. Could you say that again?
Whatever he just said, I'm with him.
Right. So, shall we take this forward for an action at a future meeting?
Karen, are you?
Yes.
Go ahead, continue.
Yes.
I'm asking your opinion
yes.
on this for action at a future meeting. Not saying what the action is. I'm just saying we're moving it to action. We can do that now. We could very well now say let's move it to action today.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is, in the interests of the interests in the policy, we don't want to do that today. We'd like to be open and transparent. So we are moving this to a future meeting. In other words, we're in
my future meeting. I'll make a motion to table, but I'll save it for the future meeting.
It's great. Good.
Yes, move it to because
yeah.
I'm confused. Nothing's been asked. I'm like, what you know? Are we
can
making?
Can I go in now and just make the motion to the table and see what happens? I mean, I can be outvoted.
No, Ralph, you're saying that you're not, what I hear you saying is you're not making a motion to the table, you're making a motion to decide to move it in a future date for action.
Right.
Is that what you're
saying? This is on workshop. It's
yeah.
not under
right.
a
so
vote.
We can say, we're discussing.
We're just
right.
discussing.
Right. Once we're done discussing, we can say, right, we want to table it. We're discussing.
Mm-hmm.
And my discussion is, what do you want to do?
And you asked Leanne, you asked
and
Terrence.
Terrence, and...
And I said what she said.
Right.
You
I said I would table
to
it,
take a,
right.
To move it to an action.
To move it to an action.
For a future board meeting.
For a future
okay.
board meeting.
So, and Jen didn't answer.
Well, I said I would have motioned to... I would have tabled it for... To a...
Okay, so
yeah.
now Jen to Michael and Dan.
Michael, what would you like to do?
And Karen, you have a vote.
Yeah.
And then...
what would you like to do?
If we're not changing the language, then I would table it. We're not changing
if
the
it's
language.
This, right.
We're not changing the language.
Yeah, that
okay.
was the
yeah.
first
yeah.
question.
So,
okay,
yeah.
so
table it.
Okay.
Dan.
Sorry, Dan.
A lot of evolution on this.
Good Lord. I've never seen anything so ridiculous.
A lot of evolution on this. I hear what the superintendent is saying. And
me too.
Yeah. I think that this should be brought to a vote. So I'd be in favor of making it an action item. And either it goes up or it goes down.
All right,
at the next action.
That's what I was trying to say. So yes, support that. So
yeah,
I think.
Well, that's no, because you have four people.
Yeah.
Did you just say
one,
that
two,
you agree
four.
That
I
right?
would
that's
like
four
it
people
moved to an action
saying,
item.
Two,
move
four.
It to
an action
so
item.
So we're going to move it to an action item.
We get to talk about it tomorrow.
Okay.
We move it to an action item. No, we
don't
have to talk. We can just vote.
So that way we're giving notice.
Is everybody comfortable with it being an action item on the next meeting?
Yes.
For those who want an action item?
Yes.
Good. All right. We're done. We're taking action. For the podcast, let it be noted, we're taking action at the next board meeting.
Who's ever awake in this?
I guess we're not getting a 10th reading.
Yeah. No, we're not getting any more readings.
Thank God.
Moving on.
Wow.
Good night, Barbara. Right along. Thanks for staying.
Thanks for suffering through.
Okay, well, easy.
Do we have a motion to accept action item? Oh, are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on action items? No. Do we have a motion to accept action items 4.2 to 4.4?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favour?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstained? Motion carries. Do we have a motion to accept business action items 5.1 through 5.5?
Motion.
Second.
Second. Discussion?
Just like to thank Target for their gift. That was 5.4.
5.4 was Target.
Oh, right. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you for that, Deb. Discussion. All in favour?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, anything of course?
Yes, I do certainly want to recognize Greg Easter, who's been a longtime custodian in Nyack Public Schools, who will be retiring through board action this evening, and also to point out that we do have the appointment of Brendan Kuhn being recommended. This is a replacement for Drew Plukowski for the prestigious choral program at the high school, and we're very excited about this candidate. And just to give you a sense of his commitment, he's coming down from Massachusetts, has gotten great reviews by all members of the committee, his demo lesson, which is actually was observed by Drew, and I can share with you she's equally excited, as is the department and some of the students that were involved in the search process. But I did actually see him at the high school play on Friday night. He drove down from Massachusetts just to see how the play evolved his own part in terms of assisting. So I think he's very well committed to and excited about the opposite and the opportunity that's being presented.
Okay.
And I just wanted to make a quick mention. I meant to mention it during board reports, but since it's personnel, it's not on here, but congratulations to our district clerk on the birth of her first granddaughter. And to our unsung hero, Kevin, who's always here suffering through with the lights and everything, thank you for so much for your endurance.
All right, do we have a motion to accept action item 6.1 through 6.7?
Motion.
Second. Wanted to just echo the superintendent's thanks to Greg Easter for service. He's been around for a long time.
Yes.
Absolutely. Great work for the district.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. Do you have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second.
Wow. We are adjourned.
How is Mr. Crown?
This is the longest time ever.